5 months of reports on the training would probably be
weekly.
Hold on, lads. I've got one for you. Just in, Will Barton has asked, please question both about which is better and why, shepherd's pie or cottage pie.
They're both lovely. Will Barton's a very attractive man.
Yes, yes, very attractive family. And they grew up in, he'll be absolutely thrilled if he's getting airtime.
Yeah.
They grew up in Troutbeck, so they're all jealous of me now, because now Will's, he's just down the road in Windermere, but he's eyeing up Troutbeck again. So he's, yeah, but no, Sam is, they both came out and ran with me a bit on the bodies thing, actually. But yeah, they're good people.
So shepherd's pie or cottage pie?
Oh, right, yeah. Back on track. See, he's in charge.
Shepherd's pie. My understanding is shepherd's pie is lamb, hence shepherd.
And cottage is beef.
Cottage is beef.
Yeah.
So I've got to go shepherd's, I think.
Well, yeah.
Lamb's under-eaten, isn't it, as a meat? Everyone eats beef.
Especially.
Have you ever used sweet potatoes on top of your shepherd's pie?
We're in Cumbria, mate.
What are you on about?
So what happened?
This is a podcast, we talk about running, we talk about other things too. So please come and join us, we hope you enjoy this. This is On the Back Foot.
Well, here it is. It almost needs no introduction. I welcome you to a rather long special with Jacob Tonkin of Keswick AC and Bob Vigard's story from Eden Runners.
Yeah, but that's what happens, and then you just rein it in a bit and you have a bit more personal time to yourself and just block the world out, and then, you know, you come back to a bit of equilibrium. Like, that's fine.
Yeah.
So I'm saying, when that happens, don't go around apologising to people. Just be like, you know what, you're not going to hear from me so much. Or the podcast's not going to be every week, but that's fine.
Yeah, yeah. I often think after the Bob, it'll probably go to like monthly again, or when I want to, unless someone that was out in ether going, no, I'd love to take the podcast over. Some mentalist.
Again, going back to saying, yeah, I'll do it.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
I won't do it. I'm
too much. It was too very.
I know.
Nah, you guys are, you're safe.
Well, you know what they say? It's like, if you want something doing, give it to a busy person. Because there's certain people in the world who just say yes to lots of things and take it on and like do a decent job at stuff. And then they end up burying themselves in a heap of tasks from which they will never emerge. And what happens eventually is they take on so much that they have a little mini breakdown.
Yep.
I get, you know, get totally paralysed. You don't do anything for like 10 days straight.
Hate the world.
Yeah, hate the world. Don't want to talk to
them. Why did it say overlanding?
And then return to just like a little bit more of a sensible thing. And then the cycle starts over again. Yeah. But yeah, just rein it in when you need to. That's all I'm saying.
I think a lovely place, I have now hit record, a lovely place to start would be with some questions from Chris Albra for both of you. Cool.
I like, by the way, that he started this beef about his car, because before that, my original thought was, when we were chatting in January or whatever, on the podcast, I was like, oh, I know what I can do. I can go through every guest you've ever had and declare my beef with them. Everyone's wronged me in some way. But Josh Hartley came on and started chatting about tall fell runners. Jack Eyre got a look in. I didn't even get a mention, even though me and Josh are mates.
There you go, Josh.
There you go. James Gray came on, spent about 10 minutes describing his favourite fell race in the year that I won it. Never mentioned my name.
What race is that?
Let's Cycle this out.
Oh,
yeah.
The only race, only fell race I've ever won.
He hasn't mentioned it.
He did mention it. I've forgiven him grief for that. Everyone,
Gary House, has Gary House done anything to you?
No, but that's only because I haven't met him yet. I'm sure when I do, he will.
Jenny Stevens, lady did the...
No, you've ruined it, because everyone since January have had on has been just a pleasant person who...
any of the older guests, Nick Jackson, has he done anything wrong
Nick
to you
Jackson,
anyway?
I've got one.
Go on.
You're looking very coy all of a sudden.
I just hit record. Yeah, yeah. What I deemed as the third most uncomfortable moment of my life, actually.
Right, go with this one, yeah. Then we'll get on to one and two.
So I'm going to take Billy Cartwright some coffee round. Coffee beans.
Coffee beans. Ground the wrong ground.
For his Christmas... No, whole beans.
Whole beans.
Okay. For his Christmas present. And whilst I was there, me and Billy were in a chat in the kitchen, and Nick came downstairs, and she'd just been in the shower, she was just in the dressing gown. She went, oh, Nick, said to Billy, will you cut my hair whilst I'm here? And Billy cut her hair, and he did an awful job.
Wait, is this in lockdown? Is there no access? No,
this is like because they started cutting each other's hair in lockdown.
Ah, right? Okay.
And they've carried it on.
They've realised how much money they're saving. They're saving almost enough to buy a boiling hot tub.
Yeah, nearly. Then rosary style. But yeah, he did a terrible job, and it wasn't level, and he took way too much off. And I'm just, and poor Nick went upstairs, and she was in tears about me. And Billy was just acting really casual, and I couldn't get out of the house, and I was, oh God, please let me go. And Bill then went 6 months out of haircut, and his hair was getting bushier and bushier because Nick was going to cut his hair. She was just waiting for his own back. So it's not a beef with Nick, but I felt very uncomfortable. So, yes, and then I got out of the house eventually. My shoes were by the front door.
And then make it sound like prison.
Yeah.
And I finally got out.
I finally escaped.
10 years inside.
And I had to tell someone straight away. So I got a phone out and I sent Martin Mickelson Barron and Martin Atkins in a voice note. I was like, you will not guess what I was trying to
say. Yeah, one and two?
Yeah.
It's not for this podcast.
Oh, leave them wanting more.
Yeah, fair play.
Hector Robert loves baklava. It'll never be the same twice. You can't.
Robert's half Turkish anyway.
We've now reached the point of the run where we're having a live munching on the moors. Oh, sing it, sing it.
This is not so hard. This is a podcast. No. About running.
I can't remember the munching one. I packed my lunchbox.
What?
In yours.
Oh, do like a barbershop. I say tell me, you say tell me. He goes tell me.
Tell me.
Tell me. But we have to, we're flowing one to the other, so I'll start and hold it, so, and then you start straight away.
Tell me. What?
Yeah, you like when you're munching on the moors.
On the moors.
I've got some Turkish baklava from the falafel.
The falafel.
The falafel.
It's all falafel very multicoloured as well.
Multicoloured. You can choose
two. Whoa, that's green.
You can choose two each.
Two? Oh, shite.
I would like.
That one that has got chocolate in. That's
I'm going to have the one that looks like a large rolled up centipede.
The bird nest one.
The bird's nest. Lovely.
Oh.
So live review here. First bite.
I'm just doing the wanna.
Oh, it's very green inside. What is the green?
Pistachio.
Okay, nice. It's good, isn't it?
It's a bit...
Imagine having that in your bum bag without any sort of packaging. The absolute state of the bag after.
Imagine taking that as your emergency food for a skidder. And you're halfway up the top and you suddenly get very hungry.
Nice, though, isn't it? What's the smallest emergency food that is permissible?
A block of lard.
A block of lard. How, like, we're talking stock cube size. Is that enough?
Well,
what about one jelly baby?
No, because some races make it that you have to have a certain amount of calories, don't they?
Really? What is the world coming
first to? First time we did Edel Skyline, you had to have like 900 calories, something stupid.
So that's quite a lot.
Yeah. Oh. So we actually just went and bought lard and just blocked the hat, like.
Push Hector!
Can I get your stick?
Second one, right. I'm going to go for the brown one.
I expected you to go for the big green one, then.
Well, I've touched this one now.
Yeah, no, you have that one.
Yeah.
With your dry stone wall in hands.
Mm.
Well, I'll let you have the big one, Charles.
You're a kind man.
You deserve the big one.
A busier day than
the beast.
I was just drinking.
Mm.
Oh, wow. My.
Mm-hmm. No, this is chocolate flavoured. This feels like an adulteration, you know, when they do a fusion of things that should never have been fused. This is a baklava and chocolate brownie in one, and
mint,
it's crap.
Mint Aero worked. You wouldn't have put mint and chocolate
together. No, it doesn't.
Together.
Why are you eating Yorkies and Mint Aeros? What's the problem?
Of course you put mint and chocolate together.
After 8 minutes.
Yeah, after 8's right. I had a Yorkie on Tuesday. Going to probably talk about that for 4 hours in my training diary this week.
After 8's, I'm just going to ignore that. After 8's, the chocolate is not mint flavoured, is it? It's the filling. The chocolate is chocolate. Mm. And I think because it's dark chocolate, that is actually, it's a better flavour combination. Milk, the milkier the chocolate. Imagine white chocolate with mint flavour. Wouldn't that be rank?
Yeah, awful.
Exactly. So the lighter the chocolate, the less mint is.
Like pasta sauces, creamy beef sauce. Mm. Like cream, like, you know, Philadelphia, but with beef doesn't work.
No, that's horrendous. But with bacon.
But with, pork.
Carbonara.
Again, it's room for the, like, the bum bag that you can have hot food in. Like a beef stroganoff on the hill would be quite
like
nice.
Like a bum bag flask.
That would be.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah, I do actually have a metal flask that's, like, for food. You know, it's like a tub, a metal tub for food. I could put that in, like, a backpack and run with it.
When you think they are quite cool things, though, flasks, how they keep hot things hot and cold things cold, though.
Yeah.
I want to You're not work. Wrong. I want You're to not wrong. Work with some soup and a choc ice in it.
He's working on that all morning. Yeah. He's been waiting.
The whole time.
He's brought it, 2 hours we've been together. He's been bringing the conversation around slowly, slowly, coaxing it to that moment.
Yes, we can finally talk about flasks.
When they bring out the back of the bat, that's when I'll strike. Yes.
I've already spoken about postcodes.
What did you think about postcodes again? You really like them.
Okay, let's rate my postcode. So where I grew up was LA220QL.
What, Los Angeles?
Yep. Yeah, yeah, 22nd Precinct for Los Angeles. The one I have now is... Actually, maybe I shouldn't be giving these out. The previous one I had was CA. Back in... You must be CA now.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
That's when you know you're in the big leagues, is when you are a Charlie Alpha.
From Torquay, like Torbay, I struggled on the phone because I didn't know what the phonetic was for Q. So I said Tango Quiche.
See, here's something for you, Nick. The history of Cumbria. So the reason they're all LA is because, well, you might know this, but before Cumbria was Cumbria, 1974, is it?
I wasn't born.
No, I wasn't fucking born either. But in 74, they changed the counties. Mm. It used to be Cumberland, Westmorland, and Lancashire, north of the sands. So the bit of Lancashire came up across Morecambe Bay and, like, cut a triangle out. So where I grew up was previously Lancashire. And if you ask, and I mean, I'm sure, like, Jacob's granddad, he would be a Cumberland man rather than a Cumbrian. You know what I mean? Like, That's it. And in Kendall would be Westmorland.
Jacob is nodding approvingly, by the way.
Yes.
Very approvingly.
And all the stuff... So all the stuff down there is, LA.
Yeah.
But it's not important. People don't need to know about that.
I grew up at Charlie Alpha 12 for Echo Echo.
For Echo Echo.
Yeah. Which I love the fact. Echo Echo.
He's in the dungeon.
Time is tight today, and I've had about 2 minutes to think about these. Just again, standard driving Edwin somewhere, and when I'm in the car, he's quiet, so there's an opportunity, although you can hear I'm talking now. So, questions would be Jess and Tonk. Literally, I've had about 3 minutes to think about this, but obviously, I have questions. First of all, when they both leave Cumbria and they see a sign that says, like, welcome to Durham or welcome to Lancashire, do they both get a bit sad when they see that sign, or can they sort of deal with that emotionally?
I used to try and hold my breath.
He doesn't want a single borrowing any of the foreign block until I get back into my country. And then I come in. Every time I'm driving back, I'm like, oh, thank God.
What's the longest you've held your breath for into another county?
He lived in Japan for 6 years.
No. Dressed as an astronaut.
Yeah. he had a hose pipe connected up across the continent, just sucking Cumbrian air. Yeah. It was at the top of High Rig there, just a little vent in ground. I have nothing that can compare to that response. Let's just carry on.
Great, great question, though.
Question for BGS. Does he think Dry Stone Walling helps or hinders his fell winning? Because Billy Brown is obviously an absolute beast and he's a builder. And I wonder, you know, do you get tired from around your job and you run less, or actually does it support it?
I think that was the whole question.
Yeah, I was looking excited because I actually talk about this with people quite a lot.
Yeah.
Because I wonder this as well.
Yeah.
To the point where I was like, I was saying the other day to someone, I said, oh, maybe what I should do when I feel like I'm in some sort of good fit peak shape and there's a race I want to do is take a bunch of time off and see what happens in terms of, like, does it help?
That would be the test.
That would be the test. I think my gut instinct is that overall, yeah, in terms of, like, stamina and general fitness,
yeah,
it helps.
Yeah.
Because I'm on my feet all day, I'm active, and it is sort of like low-grade strength training. It's not like doing, you know, big weights and stuff, because you're not just hulking stones, you just do your backing. But you'd like, you know, imagine picking something up that's like 10, 20 kilos, but like doing it all day.
Yeah.
So I think it does help for that, but it also makes me tired.
And have your hands got bigger? Because they might actually aerodynamically be good, but
if
also weight unnecessary.
I'm flapping my arms around like this, diving through the
wind tunnel.
But yeah, so if I've been doing a week's work and then I rock up to a race on Saturday, I definitely notice that I'm tired.
Yeah.
So I think probably the sweet spot would be if there's a race I want to do well at,
yeah,
just take a few days off before. If I took like 3 days off before and so I was well rested but had the sort of benefits of the general fitness, that would probably do better for me than getting an office job,
yeah,
and stopping doing it. So that's my gut instinct, but I just don't know.
And if you could announce, like, if you're about to do a big block of training that you want extra wall in work, you could kind of announce it to the fellow running world so you could really get lots of work come your way, really get you hired. Yeah.
It's a weird one in terms of, like, I get home, like, yesterday's a good example. I got in and I'd been doing, like, basically like a wall of tests, like an exam. So it was, like, very focused, 8 hours, no stopping, basically. And I was knackered, but then I went for a 2-hour run. Because it's like, the way I said to people, it's like having, you know, you've got your normal stomach and then your pudding stomach. You know, you're full, stuff full, then suddenly the puddings show up. You're like, oh, you know, I've got space. There's like normal energy, then there's like a run energy. Because I'm working and my job is quite heavy and I'm like compressed.
Yeah.
And I feel quite downtrodden almost. I get home, I'm tired that way. And then I go out for a run and I've got, you know, nothing with me, light clothes, shoes, anything. So I feel very bouncy, and it's almost like refreshing. Even though you think, well, you're tired, why would that help? But it feels very different. So,
how old,
yeah,
how masculine, how tall and wide was the guy doing this dry stone wall exam? Because I have these images of these like supreme alpha Cumbrian male. Wide as he is tall.
There are some of them, but actually, interestingly, no. I think most of the wallers I know are not these massive people, because it's more like
it's like a jigsaw puzzle, isn't it, Bobby?
Oh, fuck it. Most of the wallers I know are like quite wiry and like lean, you know what I mean? Like, they look like someone that's been a shepherd their whole life rather than a sort of big weightlifter. So they're like more like that. But there's a variety. There was,
well, I suppose it does change, because, like, you know when bin men used to be real men?
Yeah.
And they were wide as the world tall with hands the size of dustbin lids. And now I see people who are bin men or bin people.
Bin persons.
Who, you know, are quite slight. You know?
Yeah.
But don't have to, like, bin men used to have to properly lift the bins up in there. Where now we do that. But I always think the fascinating thing about dry stone walling is how you potentially are building something that is going to stay up for the rest of your life.
Yeah, if
you're using
it properly.
If
you
do it properly, using nothing than the fact that rocks are balanced on top of the rocks.
Yeah.
Which is amazing when you think of it. And you, I know a lot of people, when they come to my house, they look up the back and they see how steep it is when it sticks past. Yet there's dry stone walls on there.
Yeah.
And like that is fucking cool.
Yeah.
That you say you've been able to do that.
It's very, it's not like a jigsaw, but it's very satisfying. That's the thing. That's what you've been listening to the podcast.
Of course I've been listening to the podcast.
So it's not podcast exclusive, but as soon as it went down well, I'll repeat it again. Yeah. Two things that people say to me about my job. The number one thing, which does make me want to pick up my hammer and impale it in my forehead, is, oh, it's just like a jigsaw, isn't it? Which, yeah, I see what they're saying, but it's just really irritating to hear it day in and out. It's not like a jigsaw in the sense that jigsaw only goes together one way, and a dry some wall, if you have, you know, 500 stones on the ground, there's lots of different ways that they could go together and make a good strong wall. And actually, if you want to do it effectively, you can't go looking for the perfect stone. Yeah. Oh, you can find the perfect stone. Like, you would be there all day.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to crack on. So you just turn around and you find the best one that sort of appeals to you. And the better you get at it, the more that you'll lock into the right kind of stone.
Yeah.
But the second thing people say is, oh, it must be very satisfying. And it is super satisfying. Like you say, if you go back and look at something you did 5, 10 years ago, whatever, you're like, still looks good. And it should be there for a very long time. People go past it. You know, like, yeah, done bits down the side of the lake road at the east side of Constantwater and stuff that people, like, tons of people go past every day, tourists or whatever, and yeah, I like to think that it adds to their enjoyment of the area. And then the local people like to see that it's like litter picking or something, you know what I mean? Yeah. Repairing the area that people live in.
Yeah.
Hopefully gives them a bit of pride and like, oh, it's a bit of upkeep. Yeah. Well, it's not about me, fucking hell.
Well, no, actually, I was thinking when you said that when people say it's like a jigsaw and you think about impaling your own head with a hammer. Would you say you have anger issues, Bobby Carstory?
No, I'm not.
I am a cheery guy.
I am a chronic whinger. I am a whiner of the highest degree.
It's a Cumbrian thing.
Yeah, I just moan about stuff. The thing is,
you're never happy unless you're moaning.
It doesn't mean that I'm actually furious about things. I get sad about things, but I don't get angry on the whole.
Can I really
apart from when there is some wanker and I am trying to drive somewhere and they do not want to drive above 5 miles per hour and they, instead of pulling over at the one dozen pulling over places, that, like, that's fine. You drive the speed you want. Public announcement. Anyone visiting Cumbria, you drive the speed that is comfortable for you. I don't want you to crash, that's fine.
Yeah.
But let me the fuck past. Oh, so I can drive the speed that I want. Please.
One of the things about living in a big, if you live somewhere beautiful, then you're going to get tourists.
Yeah.
And tourists, they're in some ways an absolute blessing to the place, and in other ways, they bring a lot of problems.
They bring money, and I'm fine with it, but like, that's one thing that enrages me. That enrages me.
Yeah.
But,
you were going to say something then, Tom?
No, I just thought we should just stop talking about it now.
Let's get on to some safer ground.
Let's have the last question. Is there one more question?
There is. There might even be a couple more. He asked a question about Chapel Fell Top. Now, I don't... Did either of you do Chapel Fell Top? You did.
Yes.
Lovely. So this is a question for you, Tonk.
Summit. So, I was wondering, Bobby's nodding. Do they think Chapel Fell Top was a beautiful race compared to what we've just ran the last couple of races?
You did recce Flower Scar, so I suppose you could compare it to
Flower Scar. I did recce Flower Scar, and I decided not to do it because when I recced it in November, I knew it was going to be a million months of rain and then it would just be a bog fest and I couldn't be asked to go down for it. The Chapel Fell Top one, I went over, it might have been the Tuesday before the race, with Andrew Butcher from Keswick, and we went on a recce of it, and it was a really nice sunny day. And it was alright. I mean, if you lived there, I can understand you'd go and have the odd run up there. I wouldn't go back and do the race.
No.
To me, that was more of a fell race than Flower Scar.
One thing that would tempt me back to Chapel Fell Top would just be that Andy Blackett and Fran Blackett would be there organising the race, because those two.
Do they also have the nighttime version?
The Silent Night,
So I would like to try that, because it would be different and interesting, and done in a sort of fell racing spirit.
And a Christmassy spirit as well.
Oh, is it Christmas then?
I think it's near Christmas, isn't it? Oh, well,
that makes sense. I've seen, like...
Who doesn't love Christmas?
The thing about Christmas is... Because I've seen, like, they used to do some event at Grisdale that was, like, a nighttime thing once, and I've seen them do one at Windlatter, and I was like, oh, that looks interesting. It's, like, 30 or 40 quid to sign up for, like, a 10k race.
Yeah.
I'm not into that. But if there was a fell race organised at night, which I think that is...
I think 13 people did it last
great,
time.
Yeah. So, as Tonk said, if it's in your backyard, then obviously that's what you should be doing. That's great. But I don't
Well, we don't travel outside of Cumbria Fraser very often because we're spoiled by having...
And I can't... It's really hard to do a fellow's when you hold...
Yeah.
Immediately an oxygen debt. I'm like, oh, fuck.
You can tell by your cold Liam. Right, okay, so... I am but a spring chicken.
For those struggling with the wind here, Bobby has described himself as butter chicken.
I was
born in 1995.
Yeah.
Just so you can tell us why this... you're called Liam. Goes on to interrupt the story, doesn't it? I was born in 1995. 1 year to the day after Kurt Cobain killed himself.
That's a year to the day after Kurt Cobain died. Not a day after... A year and a day after.
So you're reincarnate.
I am. Bob. When I was born.
Bobby tells us Blackadder was big on the telly the year he was born.
You're named after the girl who was up as a boy in school.
Don't ruin the story! I was born in 1995. 1 year to the day since Kurt Baker was up. And when I was born, the thing that was on telly was Blackadder. Now in Blackadder, you will remember the character who's a woman dressed up as a man. And have to think of a name to call herself. So she goes with Bob.
It's a lovely name. Yep.
And start saying it very deliberately. Bob. My sister was 2 years old at the time when I was born. And my parents were dithering over a name. Someone asked her, what's your brother called? And she said, Bob.
Oh.
Because she had been listening to this
little detail.
It's actually this.
It was actually a cassette tape.
Cassette tape recording all the episode.
I think we had the same cassette.
A cassette tape he got free with some PG tips.
Wow. Now, as a telly man, you'll not be interested in that. But,
yeah, I'm going to get ape shit.
That's actually a very good joke I cracked there about going ape shit, because PG tips use chimpanzees in their adverts, but neither Bobby nor Jacob appreciated it.
Before my parents could settle on the name they wanted, it had already stuck everyone was calling me Bob, Bobby, whatever else. And then they decided, you know what, we want to call him Liam. But for the sake of not confusing everybody, they went Liam Bobby.
Okay.
And then the word Matthew, like, you know what, we're both winning. So, poor fucker over here, got four names for the price of two. Liam Bobby, sorry. And, that's the story that I was told, and that I've always thought. However, twist to it, when I turned 18, Mum said to me, you should probably look after your birth certificate yourself. I said, pardon, hold
You've
on.
You've got several.
Certificates, plural.
Yeah.
I said, oh yeah, there's two. And I had a look. Turns out, shortly after I was born, they went and registered me as Bob. Six months later, they went back and added Liam. After it was very obvious what people were going to call me, because I'm smart. So that was completely unnecessary, and I confronted her about it, and she just shrugged. So, there you go. But, basically, the weirdest thing about it is it doesn't say Robert. It doesn't say Bob, anything. It says Bobby.
Okay.
So, on the certificate, it is Liam Bobby.
Bob.
So there you go. And I never really went by Bob until a few years ago. Rose's nana, who's closer to 90 than anyone else, lovely woman, and she was like, she goes by Bob or Bobby now. And I said, oh, Bobby, really? And she's like, well, you probably should go by Bob because Bobby sounds a bit young and childish, doesn't it? And I was like, well, I hadn't thought of that, really, but I suppose now you bring it up. But I'm very, it's a name that inspires a lot of different nicknames. You get Buster.
Yeah.
Had a whole group of friends just call me Boobie, obviously.
Lovely. I-E or Y?
Huh?
I-E or Y?
Y?
Y, yeah.
Y. Why would you be spelling it?
Yeah.
If you want to be like Chad. And
B-O-B-double-E. Oh yeah, nice.
So I'm very
is this ASMR?
Oh yeah.
Right guys, getting close, we're gonna have some crunchy bracket time. Jacob gets some crunchy. Oh, that'd be nice. That would be real ASMR, wouldn't it?
we go. Lovely. Right.
So there you go. Bobbyguard story is named after Bob, a woman dressed as a man in Blackadder. His sister gave him the name. His parents wanted to call him Liam, thought about it a few times, ended up giving him two birth certificates. But Rose's grandma Vera thinks that Bob would be more grown up than Bobby. And when you think about the story, Bob is actually probably his real name there, isn't it? Thank you for enduring that one, but we needed to clear it up.
Should I refer to races in the Lake District as races in the Lake District or races or like Lakeland races? Because I hear both expressions used and I'm not sure which is like the touristy one or which is what like local fell runners would say. So yeah, should I say Lakeland or Lake District? On that same theme, I don't think I was really aware of the word fell up until about 3 years ago. Just, I mean, it was one of the vague peripheries of the English language to me. So, what is the difference between a fell and a mountain? Is there any difference? Can I just call Blencathra a fell? Or is it more like rounded things like Chapel Fell Top? That's what I have so far.
Well, a mountain is over a proper definition of a mountain is over a certain height.
I think that's been put forward, yeah.
But we just call them fells. It's our word for it.
It is a dialect thing.
And I am a fell runner. so I just say I'm going for a run.
Yeah.
I don't say I'm going for a fell run.
No, that would be weird, yeah.
Because then that, because everyone knows.
Because fell's right by your front door.
It would be, if you went to the Alps and started saying, oh, I'm going up that fell, that's not right. Is it? No. It's not the term that you'd use for everything.
Yeah.
But if someone said, refers to Blencathra as a mountain, that's fine. It's not wrong.
No. But then you'd have to go and measure all the other.
But if you think about like all of the names, like that it's in the name, like Skaw Fell.
Yeah,
it's the name of
the
thing.
I find it strange that in Scotland they all call themselves hill runners.
Yeah,
because a hill to me isn't a fell. No. A hill is smaller than a fell. Yeah. A fell is smaller than a mountain. Yeah. So that's the kind of gradient I've got. But I feel quite protective about the fell running term in that when people say, and what you touched on the other week of when people say that it's trail running, and like my definition of trail running is you're not going to the tops of things, you're running around the lake, so you're going over the passes, or you are always on a well established path.
Yeah.
Whereas a lot of fell races around here don't do that. Like where I've taken us today, we weren't on a path for most of that, we were just nomming around on high rig. that is like that's a fell run because it's more like orienteering rather than a trail run.
Yeah. If you think about UTMB, which people would say, oh, it's one of the biggest mountain races in the world, it doesn't go near the top of anything other than passes.
Yeah.
You know, like I've done it as a walk, right? It just goes from valley over the pass to valley.
Yeah.
So you do a lot of climbing, ascent and descent. But you don't go to the top of anything. Whereas, like you say, a fell run, a fell race, you're more likely to go to the top despite there not being a path.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, obviously you could go on a fell run without going to the top of something. That's not the be-all end-all. But I agree with what you're saying. And on the Lake District Lakeland thing, either is fine. So the Lake District National Park is a thing that was created. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like that was that term.
Yeah.
Was set up, you know, in the 20th century. But there were references as a descriptor of the place. The term Lake District has been around for a very long time. It's hundreds of years old, as has Lakeland. So I don't know about you, I'm happy with either. That's all good and fine. Like, in terms of what you would say, lakes race, lakes as well, the lakes.
But it would have to be, to use Lakeland or Lake District, would have to actually be in the Lake District.
Yes.
You know, within the boundaries of the...
That's the important distinction. So, the term Lakeland, as for the area, that is not exactly... the national park boundary is not... You know what I mean? The area existed culturally before the national park existed. It's my point. So, if you were running up Black Coombe, I think you could say, I'm going for a fell run in the lakes.
Yeah.
People say, oh, it's not in the national park. It doesn't matter. You are on the fells, the lake and fells. If you go for a run up Dufton Pike,
yeah,
you are going for a fell run in Cumbria,
yeah,
but not the lakes.
Yes.
Because on the other side, you know, that's the Pennines. You're yeah. not in the lakes anymore. Yeah, so yeah. There's a boundary there, Eden Valley, Solway Plain, you know what I mean, there's a boundary to this, yeah.
I think as well, there's an interesting, if you go backwards a little bit in this conversation where we're talking about fell running and actually digging down to the meaning of the words and that, that it is worth doing because it's a more, okay, that's probably my upset, but I think it's a more fun thing to do, to, like you say, to run up to the top, even if there is a path there or not.
It's playful.
Yeah. And that's why, like, there's a little bit with... Because when I think of you two as proud Cumbrians, I think that's a great thing. To some people, it might be like... You could... Because I called you Snobby Guard Story in the last episode. You could be like, oh, here they are.
Which I really hope sticks. I hope that's around for a very long time.
Here they are looking down. And you're not doing that. No. Because there's a difference between loving something and hating everything else. They're two separate things. And I think, like... What in Feet in the Clouds, he was talking about fell running might like die out, was when he was writing that book. Mm-hmm. And actually, it's not. And you want to promote the traditional things in it in a way that at the same time you're not like gatekeeping, where it's like you're turning people off because there's. You want the terms, don't you? You want the terms, but you just want to have a nice, like, open, welcoming. And when people actually engage with the fell running community, all you hear is how friendly it is. When people try and do a Bob Graham, you've got people putting their hands up saying, I'll run with you. And like, you know, I'm a chap from down in Devon and I get all the names of all the hills wrong all the time. Mm. Yet you're still standing there saying you'll do leg two for me. And it's like, they are very different things, but... I like hearing about it, and Chris clearly does, because Chris is from Dorset as well, so he's come up, and he is loving fell running, and he wants to hear from you guys more, because he wants to like pay respect to it. There was a little point when I was turning from a road runner to a fell runner, and this has nothing to do with the lakes, but I was like, ooh, sometimes it's a bit like of a closed club, because it's got all of these like, things that, and I think that's what I'm trying to say with you two. And
but
it isn't a closed club, is it?
You know, I'm always very keen to get people to come and have a go at fell running.
Yeah,
on Wednesday night we've got the Grasdale Grind Race from Keswick in a couple of weeks. We've then got a road race, and the week after that we've then got Lord's Seat in Bath.
Yeah,
Lord's Seat is fantastic. First fell race.
Mm-hmm.
It's on the boundary between a trail race and a fell race because you're on the forest paths around Windermere. Yeah. But you go off the top of Bath and Lord's Seat, and there's sections of it. So it's fantastic if people want to come and have a go. There's a lot of people in Keswick who are scared to come and run for or run with and train with Keswick Athletics Club.
Yeah.
Because we have got some of the best runners in the whole the UK.
Believe it or not, we get this at Tetley AC as well. People are like, you guys are going to be too fast.
Yeah,
for us.
But the top runners are still such a small percentage of it.
Yeah.
And the rest of them are normal people like me, you know. And
even some of those top runners, Mike Atkinson, he would want them to come get into it and give it a go.
But... So I you know, I'm always like, no, please, you know, come down. It isn't, if you think it's clicky, it's not at all.
No.
The people who are winning races are usually the most supportive people.
Yes.
Carl Bell is one of my running heroes, and he's such a nice bloke. And when Carl, before he had kids and he was British champion, I think he was outright and he shared it with Chris Arthur one time, but you went to see Carl at the end of the race, he'd come to you and he'd just ask how you got on.
Yeah.
And it was just like getting fucking blood out of stone trying to see how he got on. Oh yeah, I set a new record, but and it's never said I set a new record. It was, I'm not here to talk about me, I want to know how you got on.
Mm.
And a lot of times if you're having crack with folk at races, you don't go up to them in fell running and go, oh, I did really well, blah, blah, blah. It's this classic thing of, you know, you're embarrassed to say that you've done well.
Yeah.
So, and also, when it was Buttermere Horseshoe, 2018, I was really ill and I dropped out and I got a lift back to the start and Carl came in. I think Carl won by about 15 minutes and I'd never seen the end of a fell race like that before because I would normally be running it.
Yeah.
And I came in and Carl finished and he crossed the line and there was no one there. And he went and he got changed and he came back. And then Carl was the first person clapping everyone else in.
Yeah.
And then the further down the field you are, the better the atmosphere is when you cross.
That's a beautiful observation.
There is no one there who is going to be like, oh God, you were so slow.
Yeah.
Mm. Because all the people in that race have got an understanding and appreciation of what you've actually been and done.
Yeah. Yeah.
And even if you are last in the race, you're still, as a population, the smallest percent of people that are fit and able to go and do that.
And they might have been out there for three times a long, if it's bad weather, they've been out there dealing with that. Yeah. Being on the fell, struggling against this weather, it's for way longer.
You know, Leslie Malarkey, when 2 years ago she got timed out on Borodil, and last year she finished it. And she was one of the last ones, but she was 74 years old.
Yeah.
And she went out and, it's amazing to think that, you know, the fast lads are getting round in under 3 hours.
Yeah,
but for me, it's more amazing that people who haven't got as much experience can do it, or people who are three times older than the people who are in it are still doing it.
Yeah.
And that for me is really what fell running is.
Yeah. The beautiful thing is that there really is no barrier to entry in the sense that, like, you can just go out, you know, public footpath.
Yeah.
The public access area. And I know that in some parts of the country there's not much public access area.
Yeah.
But if you live in places where that's close to you, you can go out and try it off your own bat. Mm. And people, I know people are a bit worried about it, but this is why clubs are so great. Because if you are a bit nervous, the club runner, like, obviously, you know, elite runners wearing the vest and everything, but it's a way that you can go and meet someone who can give you some tips, maybe go and take on a little guide, you know, go out on the club night or whatever, ease you into it. So that's what's so special. And I understand that people feel like it's a bit exclusive, but there's a reason for that, and it's really important thing about what's special about fell running is it is fundamentally a community-based sport.
Mm.
And so races and clubs and everything grow out of that community.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you live somewhere, those are the people you run with, those are the people you see, your friends and everything. Yeah. And when it comes to race day, those are your competitors, you know, and that's what it's about. So if someone comes from a completely different area to visit that race, they might feel like, you know what, everyone here knows each other and I don't know them. That's not them saying you shouldn't be here.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the fact that, you know, that is a community that they're part of. And just start chatting to them. Just start chatting and you will find that all, if you were there in the right spirit, if you were there in that spirit of, I'm here because I want to be here, I want to go out and experience the fells, I'm not going to get too keen on myself, take it too seriously. Take it seriously in terms of taking responsibility for yourself.
Yeah.
No one wants you to go out there and get injured and put the event at risk. But have a laugh in terms of be competitive but enjoy it.
Yeah, yeah.
Then everyone will embrace you.
Yeah.
But equally, do, you know, prioritise the race in your area.
Yeah.
We love the lake. We live here. I moved house and now the races that are most important to me have changed.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I'm like, this one is in my backyard. This is the race now. Based on the one spell.
Yeah.
Starts at the hospital that's 2 minutes away from my house.
Yeah.
So I'm like, that one, I want to do well.
And it's go out and
And so if you live in Todmorden, make Flower Scar your race, you know what I mean? And as much as I can...
You had a Tigger episode about our first Totley race of the year.
Yeah.
Like, we're buzzing about that. Yeah, that's the most excited I've been for a race this year.
I get my Tigger Tour. When it's the two rigs race, or the Bessie Boot one, which I came up with a route for Borodil School for that, but I go too much and recce here. Yeah. And I know it so well, but I want to know every single brain.
Yeah.
If you have the option and opportunity to go and recce your race before you do your race, you should go and do it.
Yeah.
Because even if you're just getting a feeling of how climbing up Grasdale Pike for 45 minutes, how that feels, you should do that. And there'll always be people who'll be up for coming out with you and doing that. And that's what
is special to me, Phil. You know, we have got, there's so many races on. We're now Wednesday, Saturday. You can, I used to go to races, and I still do it now, and think, right, tonight I'm just going to work on the climb. And I'd go, and I'd push as hard as I could in the climb, and I'd cruise down. And then other times, I'd go easy on the climb, hammer a descent, and then in 2 weeks' time, I'd put the two together for a race that I really cared about.
Most races on Wednesdays do better on the other two.
Most Wednesday night races are about fiver.
Yeah.
So we're very lucky that we're not in the trail road running world where you're paying large amounts of money for something. And, you know, if that's what you want to do, then it's fine. But I don't want to do those kind of events because I don't like all the paraphernalia and all the fuss that comes with it. You know, you rock up to a fell race, chances are you've hurried to get there, you've ridden your bike, you rock up and you think, oh, bollocks, I've brought the wrong shoes, or you haven't got, you know, your favourite short on or something, but you just go out and you just do it. And you're just in that moment, and that is just all encompassing. It just takes all your attention, then you finish it and you have a good crack with your mates.
And that, what you're saying there about, you know, that to me, it's not just, you know, it's not a romantic vision that we're like, oh yeah, old school races, blah blah blah. No, it's important to do with the ethos of the sport, because like you say, if you can just turn up, entry on the day, decide I'm going to do that race, you might have someone from the village here, you know, if it's the race here, someone lives in the village, they go out for a run now and again, but they've never thought of themselves as like a runner. Oh, I'm not a runner. But come race day, someone says to them, oh, you're doing the race tonight, they're like, oh, there's a race on, they say, yeah, you should come and do it, like, yeah, all right, I'll have a go. They cobble together the kit they need, they go out and they try it, and, you know, they're not a serious runner, inverted commas, but they can access it as a member of that community from the area. I don't mean the running community, I mean the actual place that they live in, and they can just go and give it a go. So, in a sense, I'm willing to bite the bullet. If someone lives in the centre of London, and they say, oh, when I go along to Walsdale Fell Race, I don't feel welcome, I'm like, yeah, well, I'm sorry, but you live in the centre of London, like, what do you expect? You're not, you know, you've come a very long way. And that's cool for you to experience that. But whatever you've got around you, you know, that is, I think, what should be your priority, wherever you live. And if you live somewhere that's flat, like, get fucking awesome at doing flat races, you know what I mean? And I appreciate that people love fell running that aren't from fell running areas, and obviously they're very welcome. But that's how I feel about it.
This is like the most serious.
This is so serious.
I know, it's amazing.
We've been, nobody's said like penis or
no.
Are we still on Chris's questions?
They are Chris's questions. Okay. I will just see.
I hope that helps you, Chris. I've no
what was the actual question?
I can't remember.
It was Lakeland or.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then we started slagging off Londoners.
No.
Yeah, but I stand by all that against people from London.
Someone said that to me because, you know, I wrote this thing, the fellowly ethic thing that I wrote, and someone said it to me, oh, I don't like this because I live in Coventry and I feel like this, you know, why am I catered for? I'm like, mate, you live in Coventry, like, what? I'm not in the best world in the world, I'm not addressing
you. Have you ever been to Coventry?
Yes, I have.
Oh, here you go, my mate James. I think he's trying to have a dig, which would be in character. I think this is a question for Tom, because I put a picture of you and Hector Robert on the Instagram. Can you train effectively with a dog on a lead? Do you just leave the shit?
Ooh.
Hector Robert. So the Beast and I participate in canicross racing. So Hector's got a harness on, I've got a harness. It's like a weird sex harness. And he's linked with me. And when we've raced, we've not been beaten. Right? And I'm not saying this as a... I'm not saying it as...
Sorry, what was that? I don't think everyone heard that.
That's the only thing...
Have you won one of those races?
You did win Gunnershall, didn't you?
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, Lakeside Gunnershall 2023.
In 2017, I won Chesterfield Half Marathon.
My winning time on that was the slowest ever winning time on that race.
If you look on that on the bookshelves there, there's two Lakeland Paws trophies.
That's for... May I fetch this off the shelf to describe...
So the top one is the team prize. No, that one and the other one's popping out of the book.
Oh, crap, We've got two beautiful... I'm going to paint an audio picture here. We've got two beautifully carved wooden
memorial plaques here. Slightly, annoyingly, slightly different design on each. They say on them, just dropping. They say Lakeland Pause in a truly awful font, nearly as bad as the Eden Runners' best font. One of them here says, well, I will get you to discuss. First one, male fastest lap, 5 mile winner, 22:23. Is that an individual race or is that a series?
That was the fastest, well, off from the year. Oh. So we did the fastest time.
This is from Winmaster.
There's numerous events that go on.
Oh.
So that was, yeah.
It's sort of a league across Cumbria, yeah, or all in Winmaster?
It is now across Cumbria, but to begin with, they were all in Winmaster. So they went clockwise one way, one yeah. month, anti-clockwise the other. And me and Heck got the record. We have got the record for both ways.
Okay.
And it, I mean, this is the only thing that I'm very proud of this. Not in a big-headed way, but
yeah, no.
Like Hector has just barked at you two all day.
Like, he can be a sweet boy, but very barky.
He can be a pain in the ass, right? But we rock up to this,
yeah.
And the
people go,
but he's so focused,
yeah.
And I'm so proud of him. And he rocks up, and I'm like, "You're a fucking rock star, mate, when you come here." And people look and they're like, "Oh, there's Tonkin Hector,
the beast."
You know,
the
beast.
Yeah.
And I, as daft as it may sound,
no, it doesn't.
But
it doesn't sound.
I don't go there to race anyone apart from, I know that me and Hector can do this really quick, and I am only trying to beat my time from last time.
It sounds funny to say about dogs, but it's like it gives him a sense of purpose. You know, like sheep dogs.
Yeah.
If you bring them inside, cuddle them when they're well trained, they don't know what to do because they, when they're out there herding sheep, yeah. that's like yeah. that's what they are doing with
yeah.
their lives.
Yeah.
So Hector turns up and he's like, "I'm here to run."
Yeah, but he knows he's though.
Yeah.
So we do that. So anyway. On that one,
yeah, yeah, that one, yeah.
Where we got the fastest time, Heck had a poo. And I was like, "Oh no!" And I could see he needed one, and I waited for the opportune moment when it was slightly flattening out. So I didn't want to lose any speed on the downhill, and then I let him have a poo, and it was the quickest pickup of a poo.
I was going to say, yeah, because
so do you practice that in the back garden?
Well, no, I had.
You're like.
I had a tightish pair of shorts on that I could put a poo bag up with the shorts. So as he was pooing, I'd hand him, got it, scooped it up.
Yeah,
wow.
Got it.
Is
up,
it imagine it's like triathlon.
He
you
basically
know, triathlon like how
he basically
quick
pooed
are.
Into your hand is what
pretty
you're
much,
saying.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. just, and
the dog
off.
Squats and
yeah.
talks under there already.
Yeah. You know, to continue, so the other I'll describe. The other one says Lakeland Pause, dawn to dusk mixed pairs winner, and I'd like to point out that it says dawn. Number two, dusk, which is disgusting. It's nearly as bad as the cap I give you. What's this one about?
So this was the Saturday or Sunday closest to the shortest day of the year last year. And you are running the same 4.25 mile loop from sunrise to sunset.
Mm.
And me and Rich made it as a team. So we both did it with Hector, obviously. We did a lap each. Then swapped, then we did two laps each and swapped. And Rachel was saying in the weekly, I just wanted to go and just do it because I
yeah.
thought it'd be a good crack. I've always wanted to experience one of them sort of
yeah.
backyard ultra things where
yeah.
you're just doing the same bit. And we went, and Rachel said, "Oh, you know, we could do really well at this." And I was like, "Oh, well, you know, yeah, we could." But Rachel's slow with the running, right? But she can do something that I can't do.
Mm.
So Rachel has one speed and she never gets any quicker and she never gets any slower.
Mm.
And she's just the master of pacing herself. So when I say she's slow, at the start of a race, she looks slow.
Endurance, though.
But towards the end, she's actually overtaking everyone.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how? I'm petrol engine. I'm like, right, fast as I can, let's go. You know, burning myself out on a park run because I'm like, ah! But my pace is so too quick at the start and then fall off the cliff.
Yeah.
So I thought, when we're doing this together, I need to run my laps as hard as I can to give Rachel more time to get round. And we ended up winning. And we ran more laps than anyone else. And it was the first thing that Rachel ever won.
That's,
won that.
You know
and
what?
So, I'm very, very proud
yeah.
of that. Not for me, but that's the first thing that Rachel's won.
I am strongly of the opinion that people should be proud of winning races.
Yeah.
Because you enter races.
Yeah.
You enter, and it's called a race. It's a competition.
Yeah.
And
I know people who love fell running, yeah, and they don't want to do races because they don't want to be competitive. Absolutely fine. Mm. That, I understand it. They might want to still come along to the race to partake in the community, have a crack. But for those of us like me and you, you know, all three, yeah, of us, we love racing. I love like it. Competing. It's part, yeah, of the fun. You, yeah, know what I mean? And as much as, obviously, you don't take it seriously in the sense that you're like, this is everything that matters. But if you win the race,
yeah,
fucking right, be proud, because, yeah, you, yeah, tried really hard.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's really actually a bit dismissive for, yeah, you to say, oh, it didn't, doesn't even matter to me, yeah, when there's people behind you who are so also trying dead hard. Yeah. And so you're like, no, you know what? You tried hard, we all tried hard, and, yeah, I was the quickest on the day, and they say, well done, and I say, thank you. You know what I mean?
I want the winner to be pumped.
Yeah!
Like,
yeah,
exactly. Otherwise, yeah, what? Go get another hobby. And, you know, like, what the hell are you doing?
Like you said, you're not pumped in the sense that you go around bragging about it. You know, no, like Carl Bell, like saying, you're not bragging about it.
Yeah.
But I bet Carl Bell is proud of being an, yeah, English, yeah, champion. And, yeah, he fucking should be.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Dan, about Lad's Leap, was like, and I won.
Yeah, yeah. He won because he tried bloody hard.
Yeah,
yeah.
Bloody hard. You know, if you're going to win, yeah, a race that's a competitive,
yeah,
you're putting a lot of effort. I think it's funny you're saying about your Rachel Spies, because that's a classic man and woman thing, isn't it? The pacing. And that's why people like, you know, Jess Paris, whatever, do really well on long distances, because, yeah, women can be a bit more sensible and level-headed about the pacing, I think, compared to, like...
Well, Rachel does things that I can't do.
Yeah.
You know, I've done my bob, and I don't, mm, really plan on doing it much longer than that,
mm,
or ever again, yeah, I don't know. But Rachel's... like, doesn't really want to get out of bed for anything under 50 miles. And, I'm like, oh. And she's like, yeah, but I can hold that pace all day.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, you associate doing long things with running at a slower pace,
yeah,
because how, yes, else are you going to last, yes, that distance? So I can't do that. So, but, you know, it is. But in response to the actual question, the training with Heck, I will do, I'll do some proper sessions with him before a Canicross race.
Yeah.
Heck runs with me every day,
yeah,
pretty much. He doesn't poo on paths. He, yeah, doesn't like... I don't think he actually likes people watching poo. So he normally... haven't noticed, yeah, he's pooed. And he's taken himself off and he poos way in the undergrowth.
Yeah.
Which I let it just naturally biodegrade rather than put it in a poo bag.
Yeah.
When if you can't,
no,
see,
if it's well out of the way.
Then, you know, you may as well just leave it. But obviously, I am responsible in that I pick up his poos when it needs to be picked up, and I make sure I put the poo bag in a bin. And don't do the thing...
Do you not hang it on a tree? Do you not find a branch and just do...
When? Who?
I don't understand.
There's so many questions.
The only thing I've worked out with that is I think sometimes people will put it on a tree
to come back later. Yeah, but then why are there 20 of them?
That, yeah.
In Scotland, they've just got get a stick and give it a flick. But it's a poo on the path,
yeah,
now, and you're, you know, if you cross over the dam here and you're going around back of film here, just flick it into the undergrowth.
Yeah.
If they pooed in the path.
But if...
Rather than put it in the bag. Because
do you think someone hung one to go back and get it? Yeah. And then all the other people go, oh, is that what you do? You hang them on the trees?
No, I think that's what I had. But you're saying about flicking it. Like, if you're in Hyde Park in London,
yeah,
obviously everyone needs to pick it up. Yeah. Because, like, dog poo, it's quite... I don't know if it's acidic or something, but, like, it will affect the bloody ground, even if it washes away.
Yeah.
But if you're somewhere where it's kind of dissipated,
yeah,
then, yeah, why are we introducing plastic into this? Well done for bringing it back to the question.
Yeah, well done.
That is actually,
because I was a bit slow.
Are we done?
I think that is all the audience questions that I've got. I've lost my Facebook login, so I can't log into Facebook on my phone, which is a bit of a blessing, really. We had the Will Barton question. We had that one.
Well, I've got a question.
Yes.
For you, Charles.
Yeah, it's felt like you're interviewing us, but
yeah.
You're the third man in this.
Really, this is my home, so this is my rules.
Lovely.
Dance, boy, dance. So I give you the kit list today.
Yeah.
And you were wearing your second favourite shoes.
I was, yeah.
Footwear. What was your first favourite? I don't know if we established that.
No, we didn't. I now am a little IROC boy. I've got the first... IROC, because I got them even better. I got them in a sale, so that's like that makes you like a pair of shoes.
So they were like £70.
And then he said, as I was buying them, he said, I've got another pair, same size. So I went, took them out, took them for a spin, and I went, I'll have that other pair, please. So I've got two pairs of Irox for £140.
Yeah, so basically the price of one.
Yeah, like, I know that the world's going up and everything, but remember like when I started running about 10 years ago, you used to, the top of the range shoes were about 70
Yeah,
quid.
Yeah, and I was disgusted.
And you'd find a pair, you'd train the pair, which are around 40 quid. And now, you find a pair of shoes from 80 quid, like, fucking bargain.
Oh, yeah. But also, like, I have... I can't quite accept it, but then I have to have the little talk. Well, it's your only hobby. You don't really spend loads. You know, I very rarely drink, so I don't spend thousands of pounds a year on alcohol.
Yeah, no.
So I just have this little chat with me, and I'm like, oh, yeah, well, it's your sport. It's your love. You can afford to pay for it.
Well, it's a classic case of, you know, when obviously the shoe manufacturers are sort of matching to each other. Yeah. So the top of the range shoes, if one of them's selling for 130 quid, which they are now.
Yeah.
The others will be like, well, our top of the range shoes is just as good, so we'll pay it for them. So you get trapped in where you're like, yeah, you go into, you know, Innovate, Solomon, the UK, whatever, they're all...
The reason when I left Solomon was because I didn't feel...
Sorry, were you a sponsored runner, Jacob?
Kind of, yeah. I was with Solomon for about 5 years, and when they started, they made that the S-Lab Speed.
Yeah,
they actually
S-Lab Speed. They were good.
Phenomenal.
Did they have T-Labs for Tonk Labs?
Yeah.
I am with you on that. The S-Lab Speed 3, the black one.
Yeah.
I saved my last pair of them. I eked out for years. I only had to get rid of last year. So I had about 3 years where I basically ended up just using them like once or twice a year. And they developed this horrendous squeak. Mm. So people would know when I was coming up behind them, like, fucking hell, Bobby. In a race. Yeah.
Here's Bobby.
Here's Bobby! and I was so gutted when they went away, but carry on. Sorry I interrupted, but I'm with you on the speed.
No, that was fantastic. And they stopped making it, and then everybody replaced it with anything.
Yeah.
And then that coincided with the cost of thing going up. And I didn't feel that it was good enough for my chosen sport, fellering, which is admittedly a very niche sport.
Yeah.
So I do have a lot of admiration for the Innovates, you know, of the world who make and design everything for here. And Harry Bolton's electric section, you know, that has been tested here, you know, pretty much all over the place around here. And so when I think about spending money on shoes, I've been very lucky over the years that I've not actually had to buy that much outdoor kit, hence why I have so many pairs of shoes in my porch.
Yeah.
And now, if I am going to buy something, I want to buy something that I know is going to work. And
to enlighten the listeners, he just threw away a
security issue.
He's moving house. All right, I won't give the full address, but somewhere in Cumbria, there's a house. Tom lives in that house. The porch for that house has no door. In the porch is, I would say, about £1,000 worth of bell running, well, just running shoes.
Am I going to have to edit this out when all his shoes have got nicked?
I haven't given the address, and also he's moving out soon, so it's alright. So you've got until next month to come and nick £1,000 worth of shoe from Tonk. He's going to sign them all so that he'll spot you at a race. You bastard! Give him back!
But also, one of those pairs of shoes has been chipped, and if anyone does steal them...
With that smart water stuff.
So. Yeah, yeah.
You'll be out on the fell, you'll see a red dot appear on your chest, and it's Tonk, and it's tracked you down,
and the dot,
and you're
the dot is like a little dog-shaped thing, and its head is going
to be... going to be destroyed by the beast.
Give my daddy's shoes back! So Irox are your favourite shoes?
They are now, but I'm a bit of a shoe whore. I'm sure in a couple of years it'll be something else.
Oh yeah.
You cannot get too attached to a shoe because, like you say, they stop making them.
Yeah.
Any shoe that's ever been designed, with I suppose the exception of the Walshes, which are still going, but one day, they will stop making them.
Yeah.
So if you get fall in love with a shoe, and I know that you can be like one of those who hoards about 100 pairs of the Terex because they're like they're going to, you know, they stop, but they have basically stopped making.
Yeah, yeah.
But even that, it'll be gone. Yeah. So you
like
need
I
to
do,
be,
hoarded a load of pairs and then realise that I had a very bad Achilles.
Have you, it's a shame you're not size. I've taken a few of them off.
Well, I'm actually in my porch.
Anyone wants a free pair of Terex?
Nine and a half.
Yeah.
But no, it's, yeah, you find one that you love and then they start making it. So you've got to be...
You can get stuff on Vinted, can't you? Or eBay.
That's Vinted's taken on from eBay.
Yeah, it has, hasn't it?
What I don't get about Vinted is it seems like people... Like, Rose puts things up there. Yeah. She spends the whole day taking pictures of stuff she doesn't want, puts it all up, and she's like, oh, I sold some stuff. I was like, oh, great. She's like, yeah, you know, £3 there. I'm like, bloody hell! You spent 10 minutes taking a picture of it, 15 minutes taking it to the post office, postage, and you've made like a quid. But I really respect the fact that it helps reuse clothes rather than just constantly buying, you know, the world making stuff that people don't need. So I appreciate it, but bloody hell, do they need to?
Because what is amazing with trainers is we all kind of like different ones. So yeah. I'm selling on a pair on Vinted. I've just sold a pair that to me I think are absolute garbage.
Yeah.
But like someone else is buzzing that they've got them for 15 quid, and like they're gonna love them.
No, you've got like shoes should be worn into the ground.
Yeah,
and so a plug for a thing called Pair Ups. You can Google Pair Ups. It's basically it's not even really a company. It's just a fella who puts together his little kits. He's not trying to make money off it really. He just wants shoes to last a long time.
Mm.
You get in it some patches, some flexible glue. Basically all the bits you need to repair the uppers of your shoe. So if the sole still has tread, it's still usable, but it's got a bit of a tear in the upper.
Yeah.
Buy that.
Yeah.
Clean it, repair it, and you'll get more life out of your shoe. And like obviously just downgrade it. If your shoe is old and a bit knackered, don't wear it to the race. Just wear it when you're pottering. When they're no good for running, wear it around the garden. When they're no good for, you know what I mean? Just downgrade until they're literally thread.
Yeah.
And then get rid. But like that is the most important thing about sustainability.
Yeah.
Sustainability message for the podcast is use what you have.
Tom, because everyone's like, Charlie, sustainability. Yeah. I knew that word would get mentioned on this episode.
But like people are very focused on, oh, I'm gonna go and buy the green thing. No.
Yeah.
What you have already,
use
that until it's absolutely done. Yeah, you know, people like, you know, want to buy the thing that they're
that's green.
That's green.
Ah, totally vest.
Yeah, this is a beautiful green thing.
Yeah. Anyway, questions?
Yeah.
The other thing interesting that happened today was I introduced BGS to the waistband.
Oh, yeah, you did.
Yes.
As opposed to a bum bag. So I have, for the past couple of years, I think it's probably my favourite piece of kit, actually. I had the Solomon Advanced belt. I should know what it's called.
Did they design that one especially for you, Tonk?
No, I think it was a fuck you.
Sorry, it's only a little nibble.
I think they designed it.
He left. Now we've got rid of the
real. Now we've got rid of him. Let's make something good that he wouldn't like. No, I'm joking. But no, it's a really, really nice belt thing. So it not like a bum bag. You wear it rather than clip it onto you.
And as cynical as I am, having just worn it once today on your recommendation, and you kindly lent me one, I basically forgot I was wearing it. It didn't move, it didn't jiggle. I'm very keen, so I'm going to get one and try it in a race. But like, as an innovation, I'm like, yeah. And Donny Clark of the pod, he wears one, doesn't he?
And so does Chris Albrecht.
Harry Bolton, Matthew Atkinson.
Everyone that's anyone, Finlay Grant.
Phil Winskill.
Everyone that's everyone is on the belt train.
I had a thought actually when one of the first brands I had up in the lakes was around Derwent Water.
Should we start a company selling a Cumbrian belt? We'll be like the Pete Bland bum bag. It'll be an iconic
and call it the the Cumbria, the Cumberland Belt.
The Cumberland Belt.
Is this lucky for a first run around Derwent Water though?
I completely
Phil Winskill, my mate Dave, and Carl Bell.
Wow.
And
all the way?
Well, I know, just a bit of it.
I bet you were feeling pretty rigid running around there.
I didn't know who any of them were. No, I did. I knew Phil, I knew Dave, but I didn't know who Carl was. And they went, this is Carl. He's just like, I think they just said he's like, I just won this race or something. Yeah. I was like,
when was this? A while ago?
Yeah, this would have been like almost a decade ago, maybe.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And
Was he Kelly, or was that back in Carl Bell Howgill days? The OG Bell.
I think he just moved to Keswick. Yeah. And then what I loved about the run was Phil Winskill said hello to everybody. And I was going to talk about this earlier. I think one thing in spell running that we haven't really talked about is interactions with hikers.
Yeah.
Because I find them always
hikers? Do you mean walkers?
Or walkers. The crisps.
Sorry.
Let's add that to technical and
fail. 100% with you on that.
Hike.
People say, should we go for a hike?
A hike. What is this? Just, yeah, let's go for a hike. Where are we going?
All right, ramblers.
A
rambling hiker.
And anyway, I'm sorry.
Yeah. And so Phil, just really jolly, says hello to every hiker, walker, rambler. And I loved it. And I was like, that's kind of what I like to do as well. I like to say hello to everybody.
Yeah.
There's a little bit where, like, I don't know, I'm quite soft with my feet and I don't breathe very heavily. No. So I, if it's a lone woman walking in the same direction I'm running,
yeah,
I do like to announce myself before I'm on their shoulder.
Hello, lone woman!
Bald man,
I am tall and alone, but I am no threat to you.
Listeners, if there is a sentence you would like me to start shouting in that situation, please email on the backfootpod at
gmail.com.
That's very
polite and respectful. Well,
but how do you announce yourself then?
Yeah. Hello.
I think I even use a voice like runner. Coming through. I always slag myself. It's like jogger. Out for a run.
You should just sing.
That'd be nice.
Yeah.
There's a my mate Holly. She's a folk musician, and I was at a gig at Stave the other day, and they do this song called the Prickle Holly Bush, I think it's called.
Yeah.
And it's like traditional folk song, whatever. And I couldn't get it out of my head, so I was absolutely belting it. I was coming off Garden Pass the other day, and quite startled, Paul Tierney come around the corner, coming up the pass, and I was just there going, "Did you bring gold? Did you bring salt?" So I think you should just pick a song
and sing.
Oh,
that'd be nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That'll let the lone women walking in the woods know that they're safe.
You should sing, I'll be watching you by the police.
With Psycho Killer. Psycho Killer. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, so do you guys have anything on that, like interactions with walkers?
It's just acknowledging that there's another human being in front of you.
What if they don't? Because
you don't have time to do in the city, and it's one of the things in the city that is quite soul destroying.
Yeah.
It's the fact that in order for that system to work, you basically have to ignore the presence of other human beings around you. You stand on the tube, there's 100 other people, 1 centimetre from your face, and you basically have to pretend they don't exist, because it would be completely impractical and non-workable for you to walk down the street and acknowledge everyone.
Yeah.
But fortunately here, unless you've got cat bells and on bank holiday weekend, if you're just out on a run or a walk, every now and again you come across someone, just say hi.
But I come into it from dog owner point of view, in that you say hello to the dog. People who I know the dogs, I don't know what their names are, though, the humans. So if I'm out with the beast, hex my excuse to get people talking, but I don't hate it, but it's when you get clapped when you're just out for a run.
Oh god, have you had that?
I've done it. Just because I go uphill very low
and they clap literally,
like, well done.
Oh god.
So what do you say to that? What's your response?
Fuck off.
But I used to be like, oh thank you, and now
the thing is,
but then I went through a stage of being like, it's alright, I live at the bottom. And I thought, oh no, that makes me sound like more of an ass. So, but I like, fell running is hard. But it,
hiking's harder.
Walking uphill is, going uphills is hard anyway. I don't think it really changes if you run it or if you walk it.
Yeah.
I don't run, I'm not very good at running uphill. So a lot of my uphill stuff is walking, unless I'm putting really loads of effort in. So you just get used to what you do. If you're used to walking, I struggle. I'm more tired after a walk than I am for a run. Because I can go up, it's probably the similar speed going up, but then coming down, when you're walking, I'm like, I just want to run down here.
Yeah.
This is taking forever.
And I
love running downhill. So, and it's when people say, where have you been?
Yeah.
And I say, just up Stibarrow. Not as in, like, I went up Stibarrow and it was really, really easy. I mean, I went up there and I didn't carry on any further and I came back round. Because it's, from my house, top of Stibarrow and back, it's 4 miles.
Mm.
So if you were on a 4 mile run on the road, you'd say, oh, I only did 4 miles.
Yeah.
So I think of it like that, or only an hour.
Yeah.
Not in a big headed look at me, I can do this, you can't. So it is, it's hard, but if you're seeing someone on top of a fell, I think the pair of you need to acknowledge that you know, you are
safe. You have a full blown conversation.
Fit, able to do it, you know, announce yourself well in advance. I am approaching.
That's a nice one.
There's somebody on the fell. But on that note, like, it's relative, isn't it? You know, because for that walker, they look at Tom running off and they're like, wow, that's amazing. But there's lots of people sat at home for whom the walker is doing something they feel like they never do. And then for us, there's someone going and doing 200 mile a week or whatever. Yeah. And we're like, so it's all relative to what, you know,
they really
what you're doing. And it's a real bone of contention with me. I don't like this thing that's put about where people talk about, oh, it's superhuman. You know, you talk about something that is like a real, incredible achievement of human endurance that a person has done.
Yeah.
And it gets talked about by people saying, I could never do that. That's out of this world. But I said, no, that is a human being. Yeah. Now, granted, they probably have some genetic advantage. They have put in so much effort to get to that point.
Yeah.
But if you are someone who is physically fit and not capable, some people obviously have disabilities, whatever. But if you're capable, you could put in a massive amount of effort and you'd be amazed at how far you could go with something.
Mm.
And it's almost like they're just closing themselves out before they've even started, seen how far down that road they could go by just being like, that's something I could never do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm like, well, start down that road if you're interested. So, and then they say, oh no, but I don't want to. I say, ah, there you go.
Yeah.
Some people say, I could never, when what they really mean is, I don't want to. Yeah. And that's fine.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, someone's... Yeah.
But I think as humans, we do have this tendency to just overcomplicate everything.
Mm.
And I always think if you, people... You know, I've had in the past when you've been struggling with mental health and stuff like that, and the people who seem happy is the people who just don't really give a fuck.
Mm.
And imagine if it is actually that easy.
Yeah.
We are just overcomplicating it. And the thing to do is just not really give a fuck. Don't complicate things unnecessarily. And everything feels a lot better.
Mm.
And but it is actually that easy, but we don't want to admit that.
Yeah.
And we've got to find all these ways of doing it. So it's a bit like training for you for a bob.
Yeah.
I did not want to be coached for a bob.
Yeah.
Because I wanted it. I had a clear image in my mind as what I wanted that day to look like.
Mm.
And more or less, I mean, the story of my bob's a very long story.
That's but, the next episode.
Yeah,
it's a Tom special.
Yeah,
12 part series.
just do one long WhatsApp message.
Tom Marks on the summit.
I wanted that to come from me, and I knew how I wanted to achieve that, and it was really simple.
Yeah,
really. When you think about it, but you know there are ways of. It's almost like there's a secret formula to do this. There isn't.
No,
it's very simple.
Yeah,
really.
I would say with having Billy as my coach, it's been great though, because like what you're kind of just been saying a minute ago of like, oh, I don't think I could do that. Since we went more towards let's hit the Bob Graham stuff now, he has set stuff that I wouldn't have. Like, I did a 15 mile run on Tuesday to do, like, the aim yesterday was to do two legs.
Mm.
Now, in my like previous like road running brain, that's two long runs in 1 week. And one of them's a marathon. And I wouldn't do a long run that's over 18 miles. And it's because I've got someone who's experienced in fell running, who's, and like you say, like people make things too complicated.
Yeah.
I know that's one of my limitations, is I will make things too complicated. So outsourcing like my training to someone who is, that's their job, and they're also more knowledgeable than me, has been, for me, it's been an absolute blessing.
Question for you.
Yeah.
Do you feel like that train? Do you already feel the benefit of that training in terms of when you go out for a run?
Yeah.
Does it feel like that equivalent run feel easier than it would have done a few months ago?
Yeah.
And do you feel faster in races, short races, things that are not the short races?
I don't think.
You know, things that are not the long distance, but like, does it bleed over into other things?
Yeah, I think I'm feeling specifically fitter for the bob. I don't think I'm feeling faster for fell races.
Mm. Which is fine, because that's not what that training is supposed to do.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. Yeah.
But also, I don't know if I would need to actually taper a little bit more for the fell races that I've done to truly test that.
Yeah.
And I'm also starting to think with fell races, which was an interesting thing I think you might have touched on either when we were running or just then. I think like with fell running, like the actual short races, you need a bit of like match fitness like you have in other sports. You need a bit of fell fitness. So it's like, at least when I raced Lad's Leap, I'd done Flower Scar and Ilkley Moor not too long before. Whereas when in January I did the Totley race, like I hadn't done a fell race for like 2 months and I absolutely fucked the effort up. So like to know a short race and a fell race, I think they can go wrong in so many different ways and they're so different to each other. But yeah, in terms of do I feel fit for the bob compared to what I previously did, massively more. And that's probably been since, you know, going away to the Alps last year with Billy setting me actually quite sensible stuff there then, probably like reining me in.
Yeah.
And now he's gone from reining me in to pushing me forward. I feel like he's done his job.
If you've built things up gradually over 6 months, that's a proper,
that's a proper amount.
That's the way to do it rather than just launch in. When you've got something so specific in mind, that's obviously a big distance challenge.
Yeah. And I don't think either way is right. I'm not coming back at you saying that you're wrong.
I'm also saying, for me personally, I wouldn't want to do that.
Yeah.
I grew up with the stories of my nan and granddad and my granddad's Bob Graham and all those things. And I never truly believed I could do it until I was wrecking Ennerdale Horseshoe, because that was the last long run I did, which was when it was the Champs race in 21, and it was 2 weeks before my bob. So my granddad had planned to do his bob. He went and did Ennerdale and he fell over and broke his arm.
Yeah,
and he didn't do his bob because he was in a cast.
Yeah, yeah.
So when I said I'm doing Ennerdale,
how old was he?
He was like, oh, oh, oh. It was 1980 when he did it, and he's 90 years old now. Right. So you do the quick maths.
Okay.
48.
The numbers you've said have already left my brain.
I think he was. Yeah, it might remember that. Anyway, so I rang my granddad straight after Wendell. I was like, I didn't break my arm. I was like, oh, thank God for that. But I was wrecking it. So I went out with Matty Martin, Cat Downey, did that. And the next morning, I decided to drive dumbbell raise because I went anti clockwise. I walked up Seat's Handle, down, like wrote time down, walked up Fairfield. And then I looked at the time it took me to get to Fairfield, purely walking on tired legs.
Yeah.
And I thought that, I've done a big run yesterday, I've been asleep,
yeah.
And they've woken up and they've gone out. So my legs would feel worse than if I was just continuously moving. And I was 25 minutes quicker than what my schedule said. And I thought, fuck, that's a long time to be ahead. So I did a similar thing and timed myself up Blencathra. And again, I was about 20 minutes up. And that is when I knew, I can do this.
Yeah.
Because I can walk these big climbs and not be losing much time. No. I am really tired now when I'm doing it. And in my mind, it was just like a light bulb moment when it just went ping. And I thought, I can do this. So on the day, I knew, well, I've already done this.
Yeah.
So, and kind of this, I was telling you to before, in between running and starting filming this, about my year last year and meeting this lady who's like a psychologist. And I'm... my goal for this month of April is mindset. Because I, in a race, get to the top of a fell and I can fully convince myself that I am the greatest descender of all time. And I know it's not true.
Yeah, yeah.
At that moment, I am like, there is no one here quicker than you.
Apart from Bobby Lansdowne at Loughrin.
Apart from Bobby Lansdowne. But it's...
you got it in there.
It's more of a climb. It's more of a climb than a
descender. We're recording it. Okay, finish your point.
We'll let him talk. I did actually get it in at the right moment.
I have this
rip shot.
You know, I can sit off down descent, and I have no negative thoughts in my mind at all. And it is all just everything's really flowing, and I'm, you know, I'm treating it all as a continuous effort, and I'm just backing myself up. I did the Steyrbarra, 21, I think it was, might be 22. And I got to the top and I said, this is my fucking mountain. And I ran down and in my head I was going, this is my mountain, this is my mountain. I overtook someone and that internal thought became external thought, and I ran past him and went, "This is my fell." And I was like, "Oh shit."
And that's why people from London feel like when they come to a race in the lakes, they're not welcome.
Because there's Cumbrians shouting at them, "This is my mountain!" Like at the bottom.
Behind you!
at the bottom, which finishes right at the bottom of my garden. And this bloke comes to me,
"This is my garden!"
What did you say to me? I'm so sorry. I think I shouted, "This is my fucking moment." I live here. I was just trying to pick myself up. But so the point I'm trying to get is that I have that, whereas when I'm running uphill, I am just, "Oh my God, this is so hard. When is this
going to
be?"
It's a great example of when someone says a dickhead thing to you, you never know what's going on in their mind, do you? Like, that's not come from a bad place, has it?
Mindset is so critical, because I had a chat about this with Jack Eyre from, you know, my club, but Jack is world-class descender, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, the guy who took me at Lad's Leap.
That's what he's there for, And climbing, like, he's all right. A few years ago, he was fitter, so overall, he did really well, and now he does well, but, you know, we were chatting about this, because we've got the polar opposite. Comes to the climb, I'm like, "Let's get stuck in." He's like, "Oh."
Yeah.
Comes to the descent, I'm like, "Oh, no." He's like, "Yes." You know, it's like you, it's what he's there for.
Yeah.
And although there's something to be said for trying to develop your weaknesses, there's also something to be said for embracing your strengths.
You arrive
at the descent and you're like, "This is my time." And psychologically, that is such a boost to be like, "This is what I'm here for." You know what I mean? This is where I've got time to shine. So it's like, you can't really go wrong. Whatever you're trying to improve on is a benefit there.
Yeah.
Like, if you are feeling like, on a day you're ready for the challenge, good day to try and improve something you're not very good at.
Yeah.
If you need a bit of a, you know, you're like, "You know what? I just need to feel good today."
Yeah.
Go and do something that you're good at.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Go on a run that you're like, "This is going to be good because I can do this run." That's my kind of run. Like, that's really helpful. I've just got one. Jacob's been doing a very professional job of bringing us back to the questions.
Yes.
I want to double check something. I feel like this has been a very interesting discussion, and I'm panicking that you didn't hit record. Because I've heard about podcasts in the past where someone didn't record. Okay.
But 1:13.
If you press the wrong button when this finishes and it all deletes, I am going to throw you through the window.
You'll be all right. Bobby, would you say you have anger issues?
There's only two cases of anger issues. Someone driving slowly and someone failing to record the podcast.
Three. Jigsaws and
I'm not.
Do you have any jigsaws in your house?
Rose loves jigsaws. Come Christmas time, she'll sit there and do jigsaws. And I cannot get into it, and it's something to do with.
Oh, my nanny used to do all the
time. Dry stone walling.
Big bit of like perspex, which
she used to do all. Yes. I bought Rose the roll up mat as a more space efficient. But her nana has the dedicated jigsaw table.
Yeah. So there's something I'd love to bring to the world of fell running, and it's a it's a little card game called Cackalack and Poker, and basically it's really shit but amazing, and you have to pass a card face down and tell people what it is, so you get to lie about what the card is. But they've got these little cartoons of like toads, bats, rats, and the other thing is the game is originally in German, so we like to use the German names for it. So after Duddon Valleys, there was a group of Totley like men in the pub playing Cackalack and Poker, going, "Is this ein Stinkwanzer?" And poor Finley Grant had a few beers. He was walking past and he was just like, "What is going on over there?" But yeah, that is the... I would love it to be the official card game of fell running.
When I'm only saying this because it reminds me of the story, but when I lived in Austria working as a ski instructor, we used to take it in turns of you'd have a week of beginners, a week of intermediate, a week of advanced, and it could be of any age group. But there was one week I had these German kids, and there's about a 4-year-old lad called Tillman, and I will never forget this child, and he used to do my ending. But at lunchtime, we had to walk him across the piste to go into the little hut. And then we'd all dish out the lunch for them. So they got soup, then the main course, and the pudding, then we'd go back and ski. So I'm dishing out the soup, run the main course, and Tillman comes up to me, and he comes and he tugs my jacket, and he goes, "Jakob, ich muss kacke machen." And I was like, "Oh, right, okay." And then my mate Hans said, "Do you know what he's just said?" And I said, "Yeah, he needs the toilet." So
I had to take him to the toilet. So we walk into the main bit of the restaurant, we go to the toilet, and he's trying to take his salpettes off. So I undid his salpettes for him, and I hadn't really listened to when he'd spoken, and I didn't know that he meant he needed a poo instead of a wee.
Yeah.
I was like, oh no. So he sat in the toilet having a poo, and I like shut the door, but I didn't want to completely lock the door in case I locked a small child in the toilet. So I'm stood there, and he was he found it really funny that I was English. So he used to ask me, what is the English for this word? So he said, yeah, God. Wie sagt man Toilette auf Englisch, bitte? And I'd say, oh, Toilette is toilet. And he found it hilarious. And he'd go, toilet.
There's a German fella walking around now who only speaks English with a country accent.
Yeah, toilet, toilet. Anyway, he was then asking me something. He was like, he'd be like, Jakob. Anyway, after what felt like an eternity, he went, oh, schönen fertig. I'm finished, and I opened the door, and there's this little four-year-old lad touching his toes with his bum in the air, and I was like, you are joking, I've got to wipe his bum. I've never wiped, this is still the only other
bum, only one bum
my own that I've wiped, right? And so I made like a boxing glove of toilet paper, and I wiped, and I went to throw it into the thing, and I saw the biggest shit in the toilet I've ever seen in my life. It was like a big foot dick, right?
And I was like, it was like Jacob, so we got Cumberland sausage.
We got through the dress and walked back in. And as we were walking in, I was like white as a sheet. And Hans went, oh, you missed pudding. I was like, what was it? A Snickers bar? I went, no.
Oh,
a lovely story.
And that's because I thought you'd said the game was called Kakamakan. And in my head, I was like,
oh no. Traumatised.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Right, well, unless you've got more questions.
I'm good at that.
Right, question for you then. Is the bob like the thing in the fell running that you like to do? In which case, if you do it and you're happy with that, then presuming you want to carry on fell running for a long time, what would be another sort of dream or goal? Not because I think that's like maybe important, but just out of interest of what people find inspiring.
Yeah, from the outside. For me...
You're not an outsider anymore, mate. You are
in. No, okay.
You are inside.
So for me, I think I'd like to, having this being the third year that I've been racing in the championship, I would like to get in the top 50 throughout a whole season to finish in the top 50. Yeah. I'd like to do that.
Yeah.
I realise now that it might not happen the same year that I'm doing a bob.
That's fair enough, yeah.
That's a good question.
Can I just say, though, because the bob for me was... the main goal of my life.
Yeah.
And I'm very, very precious about the bob.
Yeah.
And I, being diagnosed with Crohn's disease and being really ill and thinking I was never going to do it, actually being able to do it, having my nan and grandma there to see me and be part of it was huge. But one thing that really upset me was I was on the steps of the Moot Hall having finished, and someone came up to me and said, what are you doing next? And I don't like how us humans... again, overcomplicate things and sort of put this endless growth. You know, you're not happy unless you're achieving something and you're doing that. Like, if I was to never run again from doing my bob,
I was going
to
say,
I could be fine with that.
Yeah.
Because that meant more to me than probably anything else I've ever done.
Yeah.
But someone was already then chucking in with what you're going to do next.
Yeah.
Like, there is a point where everything that is enough.
I would agree with
and,
that.
You know, I said to you before, I can't remember which Formula One driver it was, but he
was retired. Nico Rosberg,
retired after he won World Championship.
Yeah. I like that. I thought that was great.
And he was what, 28 or something, 27?
He wasn't
very old.
Well, yeah, completely. And like, you know, I'll be 38 when I do it, and I don't think that is the end of my running career at all. But at the same time, I want to do the bob now because I'm like, what other time am I going to be?
Yeah.
You know, I've started my new business, but I've deliberately not worked Fridays.
Yeah.
I'm living in the Peak District, which is not too far for me to come up and have weekends like this. So everything is pointing in the direction. This is the perfect time for me to make it a big thing.
On the other hand...
and I'm not sure I have ideas about what I'll do after.
But when you move to Keswick, like in a couple of years' time, then it'll be way easier to do it again.
That's true, yeah.
No, I think that's an interesting point that you made there, Jacob. I suppose more where I was getting with that question was...
What else?
I feel like, to some extent, when there's lots of people who are into running off-road of all types, trail, fell, blah, blah, blah,
yeah,
that are sort of coalesced around similar goals that is like one type of running, which is like a lot of people really keen on distance, going a long distance, longer, 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 and that's their dream.
Yeah.
And there are lots of different types of goals possible
know,
within the world of fell running. And so I suppose what I was interested in was like, what do you find very inspiring?
Yeah.
Because maybe I'll ask you, Tom, that question in terms of, I understand what you're saying about Bob being a dream come true in a real sense of the word. But given that I assume you're not about to stop running anytime soon, what is it when you're going through the year, what is it that really gets you going, gets your blood pumping? You're like, yeah, this is what I'm about right now in terms of running. What kind of races, what kind of challenges? Like,
yeah, I mean, I've not had a specific goal since I did my Bob. Other than I don't not enjoy going places, but I don't really feel much of a desire to race outside of the county.
Yeah.
Because I want to go into a race and think I know this route really well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've raced Langdale loads. It's one of my races I've done the most times, I think. Last year, when it was Clagfest and all that happened, there was times I was like, shit, I don't know where I am.
Mm.
And it was quite exciting. In all honesty, but I always want to know races as well as I can, so I can go into it and I think I've nailed that today. I've done that, so I am doing more orienteering again now, which is something I did a lot for my Bob training, just for moving over different terrain. I feel this year that I haven't got a goal.
But I think you've just described not a goal in the sense of being a single thing, but you have a motivation to
explore and get to know places. So that, I don't have
you're
a
going
performance
for
goal.
Depth.
Yeah, I'm going for that because ultimately I don't look at Billy and people like that, and I'm not in awe of them because of how quick they are.
Mm.
I'm more starstruck of the Leslie Malarkeys of the world, who's 75 and she's done Coldale, of the guy Paul Morris in Unterkesic, who is fell race, he does, I don't know how I can do so many races at 17.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got an England vest for running a marathon ridiculously quick. But then he comes and he does fell races, and his son is 40, and his 40-year-old son can't beat his dad, who's 70.
Yeah.
he did once last year. And Jim, Paul's son, was over the moon with that because he beat his dad. Mm-hmm. And I thought, imagine being 40 years old. And you're celebrating like you won the World Cup because you beat your 7-year-old dad. And I look at that and I just think it's amazing.
So you're after longevity.
For me, yeah. So I want to try
and fine-tuning. There's something, like you said, you've done Langdale a lot of times. I'm sure if someone said to you tomorrow, hey, do you want to go and have another look at a route? You'd be like, yeah, because there'll be a tiny step I can think of, see it in a slightly different, and all different conditions.
Yeah.
So I keep a map of, you know, the way that people like tick off summits and whatever.
Yeah.
I keep a map of every square kilometre in the lakes, which is a lot more than you think, obviously, because once you square it, it becomes massive. And I keep a track of that. When I've been there once, when I've been there again and again, have I been there in winter conditions? Have I been there at night? Have I been there in different weathers, different forms? Have I been there on a walk? Have I been there on a run? Have I been there in a race? Have I done some work there? Done some walling in it? Because then I'm looking at a sort of a heat map of how familiar am I with that place. It's very easy to go once through a bit and say, yeah, I've seen it, done it. And the thing is, one of my pet peeves in life is when people use this specific phrase, I have done insert name of place.
Yeah.
I've done Thailand.
Yeah, that I get annoyed by that.
I've done Asia. I did New Zealand. I'm like, have you fuck? There is no place on this planet, there's no square kilometre on this planet that you could live your whole life in and have done it.
Yeah.
Right? You've been there one time. You've been to one place one time, one condition. One time in your life.
What mood were you in
when
you went and did Langdale? Until you've done Langdale 1,000 times in every different possible permutation, you haven't done it. You know what I mean?
No,
you,
I did the Great Lakes Fell race. I've done stuff up high.
You know, so I admire that, and I think that's what you're describing, is that that excites you, the idea of returning again and again, looking at it with fresh eyes, and...
But I don't mind. I enjoy doing out and backs.
Yeah.
Because the view's different.
Of course, yeah.
Part of the reason I did my bob anti-clockwise was because I'd done it so many times before going clockwise.
Mm.
On the day of mine, the only people, if we count my nan and granddad, they were the only two who had a part in my bob Graham who'd ever held an anti-clockwise round.
Yeah,
and I went to that, and people were like, "Oh my god, it's terrifying to go the way around."
Yeah,
start on the road,
but people don't do that, and it's like, "Yeah, but this is your day.
Yeah,
if you want to do it, fucking just do it."
I think,
and don't. It's a circular route.
Yeah,
but it changed my perspective on it, and similar to when my mindset changed about, I know I can walk up these climbs.
Mm.
Changing it round and looking at running towards Gable from Honister, which you don't do on many races.
Yeah.
Borodil goes the other way.
Yeah.
Wasdal, you go across it. You've got all these different races where you kind of go that. The only similar bit is a tiny little bit of Enniddil when you're going round. And I was thinking, I don't think I've ever really run up this.
Yeah.
I've never run to it in that direction. I've run this way.
Yeah.
So, I've done Gable.
No,
done it from you've approached it from one area.
There you go. After Bob, anti-clockwise Bob.
Yeah,
and that ties in nicely what we were saying before about going to the top and it's not on the path, because in a lot of places in the world, like out in Canada where it was, obviously fantastic running, amazing scenery, but you were locked in almost all cases to the trail.
Yeah,
and I use that term because I was in Canada. Because even on the trail, there's all these blowdowns you've got to climb over and over. And if you go off, you're bushwhacking. You can't do a mile an hour. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You are on that path. That's the only way. But we're fortunate in the lakes and in other places in this country. You can approach the top of the mountain 1,000 different ways.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And if you only ever go on that one path, the same out and back, well, just go slightly off to the one side. Have a bit of curiosity. You know, what about that crag over there? Have you ever gone on the look? Like we did today. We had a nice hour run, and Jacob, you know, had a nice route in mind. We went and did that route. And then as the three of us sort of just spotted little bits and bobs around about, we're like, oh, let's have a look at this tree here. We found a nice tiny scree section and stuff.
Yeah.
Curiosity. And I think it's really important. Like, obviously, there's occasions when you're maybe on a bit of a training session. You're like, you want to get something done. But if there's any leeway at all to just explore, just go and do it. If a thought crosses your mind, I'll maybe extend over there, or I'll cut through there. Like, that's grand.
That's one of the fun things in it as well. When, like, you, because I was predominantly more a road runner, if you want to term everything all the time. But like, one of the funniest things is when you switch and you, like, I don't stop my watch anymore. But if I go running, sometimes in the Peak District, someone who's a road runner, they actually pause their watch at every gate.
Yeah.
And it's wow.
What does that mean?
Because it'll change their average pace.
But I start my watch when I leave the front door.
Yeah.
And it doesn't stop until I get back to the, either back to the car or when I stop. It stops when I stop running.
Yeah.
I don't, if I'm stopping talking to someone, I wouldn't want to, it would be, I'd feel someone was rude if I stopped them and they're all, pause the watch, because they don't actually want to talk to me.
Yeah.
So just, I think it's common just to include that in the time you're being out.
I find that very, it's
almost like, it's also, I find it quite odd that you wouldn't want to take ownership of the time you'd been out. You know, the other day I went and did, basically the trap, the horseshoe, and I did did the report thingy or whatever, and I was out for ages because I'm going dead slow and stopping and looking and stuff. So when I came home, I was like, oh, that was great. I was out for ages today, and like, time on the fell is a valuable
it's time on your feet
and it's time out of bounds,
and that's the difference, isn't it? So their value is time moving at running speed, and it's like,
but they're selling themselves short. Because, you know, they've been out for longer than they're putting down.
Mm.
They've been out there doing stuff.
But if you're going, doing a recce of a race, you really want it to take as long as you possibly can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because time in, you know, wrecking time is never wasted.
Yeah.
And you've got time to stop and look at it and think, oh, if I go out with Mike Atkins and recce something, it's all fucking day.
Yeah.
And Matty's all over the place. He's, I'm just going to do this, I'm going to do this, and you go there.
Trying something.
Or you go that way, I'll go this way, and let's see what it's like. And when you do that, and you have the crack, and you think, oh, what are we going to do on race day? And it comes to on race day, and you think, well, it felt quicker when I went that way. Everyone's going there. Fuck it, I'll just my guns.
Yeah.
And I love that. When you are in a race, and you're coming down, and everyone's going that way, and you think, I know a line this way, I'm going to go for it. And if it... I couldn't tell you if it actually pays off or not.
No.
But in my mind, I then go into my downhill Jacob Tonkin mentality of, no, I know where I am.
This is my mountain.
I don't know that way. This is my fucking mountain.
Psychological.
And, you know, quite a lot of times I'll look over my shoulder and someone else has followed me. I don't know if it's, Tonk's going that way. It used to be a good line. It used to happen when I was really ill. It used to happen quite a bit, though. And the first time I had problems with my stomach in a race was at the Fell side. And I was really good that night. I think it was like 11th or something coming to last descent. And I really needed a poo. And I ran down the descent and I veered off. And I looked over and a bloke was following me. I was like, no, the race is that way, mate. Go that way. And he's like, oh, no, if you're going this way, it would be great. I said, no, I'm about to shit myself. He's like, oh.
It's... What was I going to say about... there was a good one last year, a case of people doing the recce or having a look and then thrown out the window on race day.
Yeah.
Blencathra, which is a great Wednesday evening. It's quite long for a Wednesday night race.
Yeah.
And it starts out, you know, you go up the climb there, and Monday night is the Eden Runners Fell training night.
Mm-hmm.
The Monday of, we went out as a group, let's run around the race route. Everyone has a little reminder, refresh the memory. We went up, discussed the best line. Okay, grand. Wednesday night, 2 days later, all set off, get to the top. Johnny Cox, theoretically fastest Eden runner, veers off what we'd agreed was the right line, takes a terrible line. Everyone else, fast runners follow him. All the Eden runners who had been out on Monday night, including yours truly.
Yeah.
Followed him. Just like, he must have a good idea. Absolute ridiculous. Just threw it out the window. But that's kind of fun because in the moment, if you see two people, and one of my favourite situations of the race is when you're behind two people and you've got a view down the fell and they're far enough ahead of you that I had this on Wild Boar in December. They're far enough ahead of you that you can see the way they're both going and you can make a real-time decision as to what looks better.
Mm.
You know, in a race like Wild Boar, I'd never been out there. I didn't know what it was. So as I was coming down, I was watching the two of them. I was like, okay, right, that one. That I'm going to follow that line there because that's a better one.
Yeah.
You know, so I took it and it's just like, you've lots of split-second decisions you have to make. And once you've made it, you're kind of committed. But sometimes it pays off and sometimes it just doesn't.
Yeah. Sorry, that was me panicking. It said low battery.
Imagine. Low battery. Podcast deleted.
Yeah.
Pack up, go home, and feel sad.
What do you reckon? We're at hour 33.
Oh, really?
Do you think, do we put a 2-hour cap on it? Or have we got some big questions that we want to go with?
Have you got any questions?
Yes. That was the question that I thought in advance, I'd pose to both of you because I was interested to hear your sort of felt like... the part of filming you find most engaging.
I think the engaging bit about the Bob is I'm genuinely not sure. I'm feeling more confident now through the training that I've done, which means that's good training. But I genuinely was like, can I do that? Like, that's really a long way.
It's on the edge. It's on the line.
Yeah.
Because if you don't have that, it's... what's the point of doing it?
Would I like to come 50th in, top 50 in the champs is like, well, that's actually out of my hands because if 50 better runners are there that year, then it's not going to happen. Yeah. But it's a nice idea because that would mean I really give my all to six races and hopefully I run as fast as I can in them. Because I do like it when I actually run a good race and I feel like I go off at a good pace that gets faster. Mm. That's quite nice too.
But it's nice to have different... ideas about something you think, oh, that would be nice, and that's sort of within my grasp.
Yeah.
Things that are on the edge there, and you're like, not sure. And I think for long distance things, that's where you really want to be playing with the, is this going to be, you know, it's almost like if on Monday you feel like, yeah, it's definitely doable, it's going to be great, and on Tuesday you're like,
this is going to be awful, and I can't do it. And on Wednesday, you go and do it, and it comes off, but it's difficult.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. That's where you want to be, you know? Yeah, you don't want to it be a throwaway thing that means nothing. So I think that's nice, but I don't know what I was going to go with that.
But. Talking to someone that works in the week, and they're saying that they don't, they hate training.
Yeah.
Like, hate having to run fast, and they only ever really enjoy plodding around.
Yeah, yeah.
And when we've got this, we all like to race.
Yeah.
I love going to Wednesday night races or Wednesday, you know, any race. I just love going to them for the craft side of it.
Yeah.
But I'm not a fell runner because I want to race.
Mm.
Like, ultimately, I just want to be out and about.
Mm.
And that's the kind of approach I try my best to have. So when you find these things that you don't know if you can do it or not,
I felt a
lot more confident that I could get around a bob than when I did my frog graham.
Yeah.
I didn't know if I could do that, but then that's two sports.
Yeah.
And you're carrying all your stuff yourself and you've got to do it by yourself.
Yeah.
Admittedly, I had people come with me to join in, but I carried all my own kit.
Yeah.
I didn't know if I could do that.
Yeah.
I did it and it was class.
Mm.
Yeah, I think, I've done that.
Mm.
And still now, if I'm in races and I'm thinking like, I feel terrible today, I do think back and think, I've done a Bob Graham.
Yeah.
You know, and the question I thought for both of you is, what is your favourite fell running experience so far?
Have you got one off the top of your head?
Because my one is like cliche, but it is finishing the bob.
Yeah.
But I also realised when I finished it that is cliche and cheesy, is the journey up the destination.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So doing the Bob Graham isn't getting back to the moot hall.
No.
It's being going up onto Great Gable at 3 a.m. with your mates. My most cherished memory in life is finishing that.
Mm.
And there's a picture up there behind you.
Yeah,
there he is.
Head
in hand.
The long one of me giving me Nana a cuddle. And I give me Nana a hug. And I'd been crying my eyes out, and she said to me, "It is okay to cry." And then I turned round, and my granddad was sat there, and he was bawling his eyes out. And he came and gave me a hug, and it was amazing, because it was just like, it's the most proud I've ever seen anyone be of me.
Yeah, yeah.
And that I'd done it. And my granddad was there, and I had both of them there to see me do it. And I don't think anything in life is going to top that for me.
Yeah.
And that was, that's definitely mine.
Well, to be fair, I'm dragging my mum along to my Bob Graham, which is great because she hasn't seen... you can't win a park run, but let's just say I won Bakewell Park Run, and it's really funny because on the Monsall Trail, which is, I'm afraid, what it's called, Bobby...
slowly redder and redder. Steam's coming out of the
There's like a little about the trail, you know, on those little boards which details, you know, what's there. And I'm running down the end of the park run, and like Totley had done a takeover where we like will volunteer all the marshals. So there's loads of Totley people. They're going, "Oh, well done, Charlie, brilliant." My mum is 20 metres from the end of the race, and she's just reading the billboard completely unaware. I'm like finished it first. I'm like, "Hey!" Like waving, like, "Yay!" No. There's
nothing quite like someone who is not really into it to bring you back down to it.
Brilliant.
My mum, you're like, "Have you been running?" I'm like,
"Yeah."
Because I know if I try and describe to her what I've been doing, she's like, "Yeah, that sounds good. What do you want?
I hope you two will, because I can't get her to say anything. She's like, "Oh, I've got an awful voice, won't go on the pod. I'd love when we do the bot."
Doesn't stop any of us having an awful voice.
If you two can interview her.
Yeah, we will,
because she's just going to be at the bottom of the legs going, why is he doing this?
We got the Bessie Boot Race up and running from Murdoch School, the inaugural one, finished third.
Yeah.
And again, Nan and Grandad were there, because we had many teachers at the school. And Grandad used to run the hostel just across the road. And I came down, I'd overtaken Rob Brown on the last run in. I think I'm going to finish third.
That's well,
I was like, this is my first ever podium finish.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was buzzing. And I thought, all my family here to watch. And I came round the corner past the church in Stonethwaite, and I'm running up towards the finish, and none of them were there. And I crossed over the line, And there's only about there's only two other people.
Yeah.
And the, you know, first and second place, and the lady writing times now. I looked across the playground because Borrowdale School had it like an open evening, and my family, typical my family, were all stood around the barbecue.
Yeah.
With the backs to me. And I was like, oh, so I walked over there towards a sweaty mess. And I went, oh, are you done? That was quick. I was like, aye, mum, it was a race.
We finished there. Are you done?
Third? All right. Well, there's food over there. Yeah. All right. So I was like, absolutely buzzing. Yeah. And then it just crashed back down.
Now,
but I got a burger. So.
Now, Tonk says he doesn't have any goals for this year, but podcast exclusive, I know for a fact one of his goals is to go and win the Betty Boot Pearl Race.
Is it?
Yeah, because I've already been requested that I help there instead of run it, so he can take one more person out of the equation. He's like, he told me I have to run Causey Pike and help at Betty Boot, because we were in conversation with the people who helped run them. Organise them.
Well, I was third.
Yeah.
Third the other year, second last
year. So I think.
And last year, I was leading with less than a quarter of a mile to go. And I overtook Carl Bell on the descent. And it,
this
and
is
I,
my mountain.
And I, this is my mountain. And I bottled it. Because I've never been in that position.
Yeah.
And Billy Bland and Anne Bland were there. I ran around the corner and a lady screamed. She's like, ah! And I was like, that's how fast I'm
You
going.
Should have sang, yeah. I'm behind you.
But, so that is, a, yeah.
So, the listeners to this pod, who are quicker runners, you've got two choices.
Yeah, yeah.
Do six
you can either be a nice person
do
and avoid Bessie Boo.
Or have the best turnout at Bessie Boo ever.
Or be an absolute dickhead. And we'll have Dan Howard, we'll have Billy Cartwright, we'll have Chris Albrecht, we'll have everyone, Ben Rothery.
Yeah.
And Tom could be like, top 10 if he's lucky. So that's the choice. But back to your question, I've got two come to mind.
Yeah.
Recency bias, I guess, because they're both in the last sort of year that we've had. But I agree with you about, the experience of running. So I don't really use the word training, and it's because I'm a stubborn dickhead, I know that. But
with an anger issue.
With an anger issue. But like, if I went and did some sort of like hill reps or something, I'd call that training. Because the reason I'm doing it is to get fitter.
Yeah,
fine. But if I just go out for a run, last night, a couple hours run, I wouldn't say I'm going out on a training run or say to someone, oh, I've been training.
Mm.
Because if there was, if that actually worked to my disadvantage, you know what I mean? Like, so Wednesday night, I'm going to be at Greisel.
Yeah.
Right? If the run yesterday made me slower there, I would still want to go and do it.
Yeah.
Because it's like, no, it's important for me. I had a rough day yesterday and I went out in the evening. Sunshine was coming through the fells, the shadows.
Yeah.
I was out there by myself. Very calm, peaceful experience. Life affirming.
Mm.
And good for me.
Yeah.
Good for me, body and mind.
Yeah, yeah.
Know, not just fitness.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't change it. So that for me, like, it's not really a training run in the sense
that I get that.
You know what I mean? So, from that point of view, the one that I was going to, was very recently in January when I was doing this bodies, I was running between, so short version, there's four bodies in the lakes, two of them are right next to each other, so there's basically three sites.
Yeah.
They form a bit of a triangle.
Yeah.
Run between them, start in Ambleside, 4 days of running.
Yeah.
So I did that. And on the second morning, climbed up Dale Ed, obviously quite early in the morning, and it was, anyone that's listening to this who's in the lakes will remember this day, epic cloud inversion.
Yeah.
Cloud inversions, everyone loves them because they're awesome.
Yeah.
You know, everyone goes out, takes pictures, they look amazing, it's very special, there's nothing bad to be said about an inversion.
Yeah.
And I just was just in, I was just walking up the fell side, it didn't really occur to me that that was what was going on. Even though if you'd switch your head on, I would be like, oh yeah, the conditions, this is what's happening, I'm about to pop out above an inversion.
Yeah.
But it took me by surprise so much. I just popped out above it. I gasped, I was whooping, I was running up and down that fell, I dropped me back and I was just like, wow!
Yeah.
You know, because it was just everyone knows what cloud inversion looks like, blanket white, the tops were just poking out, and I felt so thrilled to be out in the fells.
Yeah.
That kind of experience, and that when you feel awe, a sense of awe, you feel small in the best possible way. You're just a dot on this vast landscape and you're moving through it under your own steam. It's a beautiful thing. So that moment sort of is representative of all those moments like we all had out in the fields.
First time I've seen a Rock Inspector, I cried.
Yes.
Because I've never seen one before, and I've just seen all the bit. And
just powerful things to see.
One of those things that I'd seen it, and I was... I'm not taking a photo of this because I think there are loads of times in life when you shouldn't take photos of it and you should just appreciate.
You can get distracted,
You just appreciate where you actually are and what you're looking at.
Yeah. I think I've finally come up with my two for you.
Oh, I get my second one.
I'll tell you what, I'll do one, you do one, and then back.
I'll do one first, though.
What you have to understand, Charlie, is I love the sound of my own voice. I'm not here to listen to you two. I'm here to listen to me. No,
Tonk was saying something nice about Spectres, and it's just like, pie that. I've got my two now.
You go with
my one. One.
Do you have one that's related? Do you want to have one that's a spiritual experience, or one that's more hardcore? We'll go with the one that's more emotional first.
The more emotional one is Bart Shaw at Duddon. So we ran Duddon together because Bart wasn't very happy with his Fairfield, and I was coming back from an injury. And then there was just this crucial moment where Bart fell over and it sounded fucking awful. And I thought, oh, he's like broke his ankle or something. And he'd really hurt himself, but he hadn't like broken anything. And there was just this bit where he was sort of running on anger, like effing and jeffing. But he proceeded to overtake all the three people who'd overtook him when he was down on the floor.
Yeah.
And it was just something great about running a like long race with your mate.
Yeah.
Him like... people use the word on podcast adversity now. He really saw some adversity there. And I was there and like, I was annoying because I was right in his face going, are you right, mate? You're right, mate. And then he just like, because he's like a very gentle, like thoughtful guy. Seeing him like with the like the fire in his belly and just like giving it some, I loved it. That was just brilliant. So that was my more emotional one.
Well, that was short. Go with your second one.
And my second one was Buckden Pike.
Yeah.
In the champs, I didn't start... I do this thing now where I think, so I don't go off too fast, I'll start, like, not on the front row. Mm. And then about 2 minutes later, that becomes, oh, I should be further up the field. Mm. So I went storming through the field and started thinking, oh, I'm in the best 30, like, uphill runners in the country. Mm. And then I got... like my feet felt like they were going to cramp, my hamstrings were pulling, and basically like I dropped anchor on the first climb and went from about 30th or top like 25 to I think I was 70 by the time I finished the race, like years old. like the descent though was a really good descent, and I had a really good race with a couple of guys. And also when I blew up, the Totley lads all came past and everyone slapped me on the arse one by one as a chiller. So there was a bit of like mates on hills. There was a moment of belief where I thought, oh my God, I'm amazing. Yeah. And then there was reality. And then actually, I kind of like, I got through the adversity.
Yeah.
I ran a good downhill. And when you've run a really fast, exciting downhill and you arrive at the end of the race, that's quite a nice feeling too.
No, that like... is someone whose downhill is not their strong point.
Yeah.
That I feel very excited when I've done a good downhill. Yeah. Like
me too.
Like Loughrigg on Wednesday.
Yeah, brilliant.
Oh, we circle back to the
which is not one of my top memory moments ever. But I was dead chuffed because
I certainly was.
I was at my peak. Peak. It's all downhill. Yeah. Hey, it's all downhill for me.
It wasn't all downhill.
I felt a bit sort of under the weather that day, so it was pissing it down, so I was thinking about wimping out. But I went along anyway and went off fine. But like the fact that I felt like I came down well and did justice myself. And the important thing was I didn't give up at the end, because I'm quite a bad one for when you can basically see the line and someone's ahead of you, I'm just like, ah, whatever. You know, what's the difference between like 15th and 16th place? Yeah. Who cares?
Yeah.
So I just sort of jog it in. But I had been getting slightly closer enough as we went. I was like, I can do this.
Yeah, yeah.
And sprinted to the line. So 3 seconds in it between me and the... And obviously it wasn't for like a win or anything. It was 7th and 8th.
Hmm.
But I was so chuffed with myself that I didn't give up on it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I was like, no, I can do this. And it's so exciting to finish on a motivated point rather than to finish on a just sort of trotting in at the end of... You know what I mean? So yeah, it's when you've nailed the downhill and you come in,
you feel strong.
Yeah, and you ran a good race in that story, didn't you?
Yeah, I was actually 1 minute quicker from top to bottom than master descender Jacob Tonkin. Thanks for it. I wasn't going to bring it up, but as soon as it was.
And what a lovely way to end the podcast.
I will say this, as an explainer, I'll say the reason why I'm not very good on technical descent. If it's a descent that is a gradual enough gradient that I can open up a stride, as a taller person like yourself, you get into a long stride and then you can go. Yeah. And if you don't have any sort of mental hesitation on braking, then it's fine. If it's very steep, I'm good on that really, really steep, rocky stuff, but if it's steep, grassy, I mentally panic and start all but walking and it's absolutely terrible. And that is where the man sitting to my right would be getting excited, coming into his own, and absolutely blow the barn doors off what I could do. So horses for courses, granted, but it's still nice to come past a good descender on any race.
Who should we let have the last word of this three-way?
Well, what time are we on now?
It's your podcast.
1:50. Yeah, no, but I feel very much a guest today. It's lovely. I'd like maybe you, Tom. How could you send these lovely listeners off? I mean, there probably will be some.
I would like Tom to say the last word, but I just want to say something before, so that I know that I can shut up.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, I want to come. I just want to say to you, just a genuinely.
Yeah.
This episode has actually been a lot more serious. So
we've already been
a bit more emotional than before.
Yeah, yeah.
But everything I normally send in is kind of taking the piss and lighthearted, because I think that the podcast lends itself to a lighthearted, just having a crack.
Yeah.
And that's what I like about fell running, is that that's the feel of it. The podcast reflects the community in the sport very well. Yeah. And I like that.
Over to our sponsors.
But I appreciate the work that goes into put it together, and I have noticed that you're getting really good at it. You know what I mean? And I don't mean that as a backhanded compliment, but what I mean is that I listen to the episode and it's this beautiful collection of just different bits and bobs. And I said this before we started recording to before, but I want to repeat it.
Yeah, yeah.
When you say to the world, You can't skip anything. You're listening to a little segment, and you're like, yeah, this is all right. But you're like, well, I don't know what's coming next. And you don't know what's going to turn up. And it might be Dan Aworth explaining how he is one of the fastest runners in the country.
Yeah.
Or it might be, Will Boothman describing his sandwich. And I'm sure he is a great runner, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah,
Both of them, equally interesting in different ways and engaging, and all part of the Gated of Nations, as it were. So basically, I just want to say thank you to you for doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I have nothing else to add.
Yeah.
If you want to respond to that before he has the last word.
Yeah, I think Tonk should have the last word. Yeah. I like it. I was going to say, actually, I was thinking a little question for you during the episode, and maybe Tonk could answer it too, would be, we see what we've had with On the Back Foot over the last, it's changed a little bit since it's gone weekly. I was always hoping by putting my bit out that I wasn't sure, I didn't know if reading my training diary was the best thing to do, but I knew it was something I could bring every week. And then, it has kind of changed it. Is there anything with the podcast going forward that you guys would like to hear more of or...
I'll say a quick reply so you can have a... I plan almost everything in my life and I'm very organisation focused.
Yeah.
And I love about the podcast that my involvement with it has been completely, and I mean this genuinely, in the best way, off the cuff.
Yeah.
I just, as it occurs, I think, I'll just send something in.
Yeah.
So that's really special to me.
Yeah.
I have nothing to recommend to you to change. I love that it has evolved naturally.
Yeah.
And I think whatever your gut tells you, that's good for me.
Okay.
Well, I got very, very drunk last night. End of season rugby club do. And I've done quite a lot of podcasts and filming and recordings and stuff. And there's very few that I get very, very excited about.
Mm.
Because a lot of it's, oh, it's a similar thing, or you're going to meet up, you're going to go for a run, do that. Whereas I've been able to take you two out from my house for a run today. We've gone up on a high rig. I was really hungover, felt good, and we're out. Came back, we've had cheese on toast, some crisps, numerous cups of tea, and we've just had a crack.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've been listening to this, and I'm thinking, like, oh yeah, this is actually a podcast, not just us having a crack.
Because
we could have had the same conversation without the mic on.
Before you pressed record, we had a very, an emotional conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
About the three of us, because we were saying how the three of us our mates,
yeah,
but this is the first time that we've all got together.
It is, isn't it?
We're mates, but we didn't know loads about each other, and so we've had that now, and now it's just, there's not been an ounce of this that has felt like it's a recording thing.
Yeah.
And that, you know, back to Bobby, the stuff that I've always sent you, I've just thought, oh, Christ, right.
What's he want this week?
Some words, quick. Singing a stupid song, you know, and I always say to you, and I send you stuff like, use whatever you want. If you don't use anything, I'm not going to be able to say it.
Whereas I'm like, oh, I better put that in.
I'm really not bothered about what you do or what you don't use. You know, I mainly send it in for my own satisfaction to make myself laugh.
Yeah.
Rather than thinking, oh, someone might find it funny.
But
I've had a very good day today doing this.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think if you have the option to have more days like this with people, then I think that would be really cool.
Yeah.
So even if it probably won't work for loads of races, but even if you could do a beat whilst you're wrecking a race, you know, and have little snippets of what people might discuss when they are doing a recce or things like that, you know, that might help some people from what we've been talking about, maybe getting into fell running, might help them see the inner workings of the mind of Matthew Atkinson or someone.
Yeah, that'd be great, wouldn't it?
Which I think would be pretty cool.
Yeah. Okay. So I really like that. That's a really good answer.
Mm-hmm.
Decent.
So yes. So thank you for listening, everyone.
Thank you.
And please don't steal my shoes.
The address is
you cut it there. That's the end.
Yeah. What's your favourite postcode? Okay, I don't think this episode needs a summary. If you've got this far, you must like these two men and realise that I think they're great as well. If you don't like the three of us and you're this far into the podcast, that is incredible. Well done. And just in case you wanted more, there is more. The only thing to review, but quickly this week, is my week of training and what I've had for breakfast in on the Bobfoot. So the weekly totals are 14 hours and 18 minutes of running, covering 70.95 miles, 18,870 feet, 5,751 metres, in the style of Donny Clark. Monday, woke up, breakfast porridge, run 81 minutes, good, felt good, slow, surprise view over Haversedge, beautiful. Tuesday, bad weather, rain, long run, 3 hours, 7 minutes, long, hilly, rain, slow. Gust, face, Yorkie, hill, mantor, nearly blown off, wind, tired. Wednesday, easy run, 50 minutes, porridge breakfast again, took easy, good, gym, lifted things, put them back down, lifted, strong, slow lifts, not many lifts, went home, ate food. Thursday, 90 minutes, twice up over Wynn Hill,
lovely, sunshine, slow, easy, felt good, slow, nice, relaxing, lovely, Friday, easy run, 35 minutes, easy, listening to edit of podcast, enjoyed it, good, massage with Jacob Tonkin, sore bits in the bottom, sore groin, but good, thank you Jacob. Saturday, 6 hours, 48 minutes, according to Strava. Recce, leg 1 and 2 with Jake Lane. Skiddo, fast. Jake, fast. Skiddo, down to Carver. Wet, boggy, boggy. 8 whole pack of licorice all sorts on Great Carver. Good, good. Wet, wet. Mongrisdale, wet. Wet. Glencafra, wet. Parachute, awful. Fucking awful. Fell over, got back up. Fell over, got back up. Fell over, got back up. Decided, Lords. Lords, not Lords. Halls fell on day. On to Sunday. Actually, no. Let's talk about leg 2. Wet, really wet, really cold, windy, 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 hail, face, ow, not enjoying, bailed out at Helvellyn, but felt okay, went for curry. Sunday, 80 minutes, with Tonk, BGS, you've heard enough about that. Legs in one piece, happy man, back to Derbyshire, week done.
We talked about running, we talked about other things too. Thank you for joining, we hope you enjoyed it. That was on the back foot.
No, what we should do is, he says that, we're going to walk out and from out the other room say bye Tonk, and he's going to slam the door. That's the end of the podcast.
At first I was afraid.
I was petrified. No, that's not right. At first I was afraid. I was petrified. You're thinking I could.
Wait, let's do the harmonizing again.
At first I was afraid. You'd rather go low, wouldn't you? I can go higher.
I can do either.
Oh, at first I was afraid, I was petrified.
First I was afraid,
I was petrified. I'll go high. Right. 1, 2, 3, 4.
First I was afraid, I was petrified. Kept thinking I could never leave without you by my side. And I spent so many nights thinking how you did me wrong. And I grew strong. And I learned how to get along. I know you're back from outer space. I just walked in to find you here with that sad look upon your face. I should have changed that stupid lock. I should have made you leave your keys. If I'd known for just 1 second, you'd be back to bother me. Go on, now go and get the fuck out of my house.